Oi, Snorri, what are you doing? You remember we're gaming tonight? And you're doing the battle report? So what's the gyrocopter doing here? Get it off the lift and out of here!
And quit the grumbling, you, or you'll be the first 3-century apprentice I've had!
And you, manlings, what are you doing?
Comparing your lists? What for?
Yeah, keeping the ale filled, that's your job. Now you, Tolan, get the steam tank out on the drive. And you two, get the brooms and get to work. They're bringing the tables in soon. Ugh, only thing I hate more than a filthy gaming floor is elves. Now shut it, the lot of you. I'm turning it on.
Get your greasy little faces up to the speakers. It's time for Garage Hammer with your hosts, David Witek and Christopher Barnett. On today's show, Star Wars, Disney, PC Gaming, The Black Library, The Chaos Dwarves, and The Wodcast. They also preview two new upcoming segments, and if they ever get around to it, they might actually give you their impressions of the 8th edition rules with the new books now at your friendly local gaming stores. So without further ado, here are your hosts, David Witek and Christopher Barnett. And welcome to the second episode of Garage Hammer. I, once again, am David Witek.
And I'm Chris Barnett. Welcome to the second episode. All right, well, we've got plenty to cover today. I've been anticipating this for weeks. We've been practicing getting ourselves ready for the second episode. We've got lots of new, not just rumors, but actual facts. We have clarification. We've had the book in our hands. Dave, welcome back from Disney World. Do you want to tell me about your trip?
Yeah. So, I guess we'll do this as the what we've been doing the past couple weeks. We can add that in since I have done no gaming because I've been in Disney World.
Slacker.
Yes. Oh, before that, we should mention the business end of this.
Absolutely.
Once again, folks, we are on iTunes, and we have two 5-star reviews, which we very much appreciate. From Dondro and Warhammer Noob, thank you for your very kind reviews. We could use more, folks. If you're clicking through iTunes or if you're on our website, click on the link under iTunes. It'll take you right there, and you could write us a review. We would really appreciate it. That would be wonderful. We don't have any individual sponsors for this show yet. Nobody sponsored the show at the $10 level, so we don't have any shout-outs for that sort of thing to read. However, Chris, we do have an advertiser, don't we?
We do have a show sponsor, Unique Gifts and Games in Grays Lake, Illinois. We'd like to introduce, and we'd like to thank them for their interest in Garage Hammer. They have been in business for several years now. They're excellent business owners. They've got a full line of Warhammer, Warhammer Fantasy, Warhammer 40K, and War Machine as well as many different board games, card games. They have dozens of demo games. It's a great place to meet. It's a great gaming community in Grays Lake, Illinois.
They've got everything. Our friend, they're friends of ours, Ken and Kathleen. But they have all sorts of board games. They've got Fantasy Flight games. They've got Games Workshop games. They've got the Reaper models. They've got, and almost any board game you can imagine they have. And if they don't have it, they're willing to get it for you. They have a little library section in the back.
A fairly extensive library.
Yeah. Stuff like the Haunted Illinois tours. They've got stuff on tarot. They've got incense burners, all sorts of little magic-y stuff. They've got jewelry. They've got those little healing stones. Basically, it's sort of like a full gambit of interesting things at this store. As a gamer, I pretty much stay on the game side. But I will say that Mrs. Witek likes that other side. And the one time I taught that painting class there, some of the guys brought their girlfriends, and their girlfriends were looking around at the incense and the incense burners and the jewelry and all that stuff. So this is actually a place that will cater to both the gamer and the gamer wives and or gamer girlfriends. But it's a great store. If you live in Lake County, Illinois, or near it, and you're near Grays Lake, it's on Center Street. And they're absolutely worth checking out. We will have a link to their website in our show notes.
Right, their URL is www.uniqueGG.com, UNIQUEGG.com.
And
It should be mentioned, Dave, they're actually going to be having a Warhammer Fantasy tournament. It's the first that I'm aware of with the 8th edition rules. That's going to be on the 14th of August. I believe it's $5. They have a maximum of 12 players for this small tournament. It's going to be 1,600 points. That way your lords and your heroes, maximum of 400 points for them. But that'll be the 14th of August, so look into them. Go into their website for complete details. And it's going to be a small, intimate tournament.
The only tournament I ever played in with Harrison was at Unique Gifts and Games. It was a 1,500-point tournament. I came in dead last, but I think it's interesting with the rules changes, which we're going to get into, is before at 15 or even 1,600 points, I could not take a lord choice, but now I can.
Now you can.
So we'll get into that a little bit later. Okay, so we mentioned our new show sponsor, which, yay, show sponsors are good. Disney World.
Yeah, tell me about it. So, first of all, you didn't come back with a poncho gift for me. I'm very disappointed.
I wanted to get a poncho for myself. I totally didn't talk to you beforehand to get you a poncho.
I should, if I was smart about it. Folks, just so you know, I have a strange obsession with ponchos, and I love them. I will wear them proudly. I look ridiculous. My brother calls me El Poncho Dorco. It's a title that I claim with great pride.
We gave him that. We gave him that name, though. That was our name we came up with, and then we gave it to your brother to use.
Is that right?
Yes, because when I went to Disney last time, I brought us home matching ponchos, which is sort of borderline, you know.
It's a little weird. I actually wish you had bought me one that was slightly less ugly.
No.
I don't like the ugly ones. I actually like the nice-looking ones.
It wasn't ugly. That's a nice poncho.
Well, it's got a horse head on it.
They all had horse heads on it. That was all the ponchos they had. That was that poncho or no poncho.
Well, all right, then I'll take the horse head.
There you go. So, that's that. Disney was cool. I really enjoyed it. I had absolutely no Warhammer anything going on except what you were sending me from when you went to the store and were looking at the new book.
That's right.
But we got there on the very last day of the last Star Wars weekend of the year, which was really cool. We headed over to the Hollywood Studio section of Disney World.
The MGM?
MGM, okay. Yeah, whatever. I don't think it's MGM anymore. I think they just call it Disney's Hollywood Studios.
I've only been to Disney World once since Epcot Center existed. So most of that was all in its infant stages. I've seen very little of it.
That's cool. And Star Tours is there, and so they have these Star Wars weekends every year, and they bring in some of the celebrities from the movies. We got there on the last day. We managed to get there in time for the parade. I got a whole bunch of cool pictures. It was a really cool parade, actually. At first they come out on a land speeder, comes rolling out. You got Jedi Mickey. You got Princess Leia Minnie. You've got Darth Goofy. But then you've got all the different stormtroopers in different outfits coming out in little units.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
So like scout troopers?
Regular stormtroopers, scout troopers, biker scouts. I mean, every uniform you could think of. The clone trooper uniforms.
Yeah, okay.
They all came out. They had a bunch of different Jedi. They had a guy, like a Darth Maul.
Did they have Jar Jar in a cage?
They did not have Jar Jar at all,
which I think
was a definite bonus.
Probably because they know that that poor guy will get beaten.
But they had some celebrities there. Ray Park, who played Darth Maul, also was Toad in X-Men.
He was actually there.
He was actually there and not in costume. They rode him in a car, and there he was just there. You could get your pictures with him and stuff. I got pictures of him.
Okay.
Peter Mayhew, the guy inside the Chewbacca out costume.
Yeah, yeah.
He was there on... They rode him in.
How old is he now?
He is getting up there in age.
I don't recall that he looked very good back in 77.
He's white-haired, okay. But he's still, I mean, he's sitting on the back of the car waving and moving about.
Good
he was
for him.
Doing good. They had the guy who does the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi on the Star Wars cartoon that's on Cartoon Network, Clone Wars.
I've never rated it, but okay.
I like that show, actually. They also had the girl who does the voice of his apprentice on the show.
So this is all the Star Wars for Kids stuff?
Well, yeah, the animated stuff. But they had those guys there. They had the guy, and I can't think of his name, and I feel bad, but the guy who actually was in the Boba Fett costume in Empire and Jedi.
Oh, I don't know that actor's name.
But he was there. You know, and then they all come out. It's a huge parade. I took tons of pictures. It's really cool because you get to see all those uniforms, all those outfits. And then I'm taking pictures, and Darth Goofy comes walking by, and I snap a shot of him.
Darth Goofy?
Well, it's Goofy dressed up like Darth Vader.
That's
funny. And I'm standing right on the curb, and I'm snapping pictures. He gets about 4 feet away, and I snap a picture of him. And as he walks by, I'm trying to aim for the next picture, and I feel this poke. And I look down, and Goofy is poking me in the belly as he's walking by, which I thought was kind of funny and kind of odd.
Well, he's a Dark Lord of the Sith. He can do whatever he wants.
Yes, he was. Yeah, but I mean, it was a really neat.
Did you press any of the buttons on his chest in
retort? No, I didn't. I didn't think it was appropriate. But that was a really cool thing. I didn't stand in line to get pictures with Darth Vader or anything like that because the lines were crazy, stupid long.
Yeah.
Although I did get a T-shirt, and I got my Star Wars Weekend T-shirt. Like I said, we went. It was me and Heather and the three kids and my in-laws, and we stayed on the grounds, so everything was really nice, and you just took the monorail to the parks and everything. But Star Wars Weekend was cool. The rides were a lot of fun. I finally got to go on the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror.
I'm not familiar with that. Oh, is that from the MGM or whatever?
Yeah,
the movie
it's at
studio
the Hollywood Studio.
Okay.
There's a 13-story building. With a big frontage missing, and you go through this walk, and it's like the Twilight Zone, and lightning struck the elevator, and all these people disappeared. And basically, if you live anywhere near, like us, you know, the giant drop at Great America, mm-hmm. where they bring you up in the air and they drop you?
Yeah, I know it, but...
That's the ride. You go in this cart, and they take you through the hotel, and then you're sitting there, and all of a sudden, boom, you fly up, and you go, what the... And a boom, you drop, and they do that 3 or 4 times, and they actually open... There's like this open area, so as you go up, you can actually see way out where you are.
Those rides, I've discovered the hard way. I think it was last year. I went to Great America with a couple of friends from Lafayette, Indiana, and I found out the very hard way after the first roller coaster that I can't get on roller coasters anymore. I had a great time, but I got myself so green ill sick that...
You know, roller coasters, I've always needed to take a little Dramamine before I go to Great America. It's not the drop. I love the giant drop. That's awesome. The teacup ride makes me want to puke, though.
Well, that one's intended, I think, to make you sick to your
stomach anyway.
Spinning
me around that much is never a good plan. Never. But that was cool. You know, like I said, we went with the kids. We went to the different shows. We went on all the different rides. It was a week of really, really good fun, and it only rained the last 2 days we were there.
For Florida, that's pretty good fortune.
Yeah, I mean, they had like 40% chance of rain every night. In fact, the last time we were there, it rained every single day we were there from 3 to about 3:45. It was like it hit the hottest part of the day, and as soon as the day started to cool off, it would rain for about 45 minutes. But on this trip, there was really no rain except for the one day, which was really cool. We did the day it rained, we changed our reservations from Epcot to the hotel restaurant, which was excellent. And for the second year in a row, Kira threw up at dinner.
Oh, great.
We're hoping this doesn't become a tradition. Yeah, last year we went there, we were in the French restaurant. And, you know, it's really hot. Obviously hot and humid at Disney World.
Because it's in Florida, Dave.
Well, yes. And what winds up happening is, you know, she's really hot, and then she gets in there, and she doesn't drink soda. She drinks, like, chocolate milk. So she has a chocolate milk, she has her dinner, then she's got ice cream, so she's hot, and she's putting in all these cold dairy products into her. And she wasn't actually sick. Her body just was like, no. No, I'm not putting up with this. So same thing happened this year. We're sitting at the restaurant, The Wave, inside the Contemporary Resort. It's really hot. We get in there, it's cool. She has a couple chocolate milks, has a couple slices of her little kid's cheese pizza. She's starting in on her ice cream. She gives us that look, says, my mouth hurts. We look at her. We grab the little the cloth napkins, and she throws up right into her bowl. We're cloth napkining her, you know, kind of keeping it all together. You wind up tipping the waiter an extra $10-$15 on top of the regular tip because they had a
couple of tables around you as well.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, it wasn't... really actually all that gross or smelly or anything, and it all went right into one little bowl, and we had the napkins out. Nobody actually saw anything. Now, there was a couple of ladies, about five or six ladies at another table next to us, and they came over like, would you like some more? You know, they had those big cloth napkins.
We do hope you're eating while listening
yes.
to this podcast.
So they bring us those, and I knew she wasn't sick when I took the napkins from the lady, and she finished heaving and looked over at the lady who gave her the napkins, and the lady said, I hope you're okay, sweetheart. And she looks up, she goes, oh, you have a crown. Daddy, look, a princess. She has a crown. You know, just totally, like, not phased. Heather takes her out after that. We wipe off her mouth. Heather just takes her back to the room. Halfway to the room, she wanted ice cream. So I knew she wasn't physically sick. It was just a combination of the heat and the cold and what she was eating.
Yeah.
Because she was very upset that she didn't get to finish her ice cream. And then she got back to the room, and we threw her in a bath and washed her up, and then she wanted donuts. And so we had to be like, no, no, no. But that was sort of the only really exciting thing that happened. Other than that, it was just, I mean, it was a lot of fun.
So wait, what you're telling me is that the most exciting thing that happened at Disney was your daughter throwing up.
And Goofy poking me in the belly.
That's a lot of money for getting poked in the belly.
Well, you know, we weren't there for excitement. We had a lot of fun. We went on all the rides. We went to Small World and the teacups and the Snow White and Dumbo and Winnie the Pooh.
Is Mr. Toad's Wild Ride still there, or does that not exist anymore?
Was Mr. Toad's Wild Ride a ride at Disney?
Yeah, I guess it's not there anymore. That was one of my favorites. It's just a goofy little... It's almost like a little tiny building, and you just sort of go on this little car that winds around. And
I mean, they have the car race thing, but I didn't see Mr. I didn't think that was a Disney thing, though. Are you sure that was Disney?
I am sure.
Okay. Or was it Disneyland?
Well, it was at Disneyland, and I believe at one point it was at Disney World.
But okay,
bear in mind, Dave, my experience with Disney is when I was like 7, 8, 9, 10
years old. So like 45 years ago?
You're a scumbag.
I am.
I just want to remind the world, yes, you can poke fun at my age, and you're exactly 1 year behind me. So, you know, anything you make...
I will always be younger than you. Just, that's all that matters. That's it. That's all that matters. Always younger.
So you're always going to be less experienced, make more mistakes, and you'll learn from your elders. That's good.
Sure. And there's the cuckoo clock.
And we're at the half-hour mark, and thank you for tuning in. If you're just tuning in now, do Garage Hammer.
We haven't actually talked about anything yet.
Of course, how could you just be turning in now, being that this is a podcast? So we'll just pretend that it's a radio show and keep going.
So, yeah, after Disney, you know, we got home, and... while I was gone, you were doing all the research on the book. I only got to spend about 2 hours with the book on Saturday after I got back.
Yeah, I've actually, you'd think it sounds like a great deal of fun, but it was like, go straight from work to the game store, and you think you're going to have a great time, and I just plug down and just start jotting down all the notes I could possibly get. I spent 3 days with the book, and my hand hurts. You know, it's a lot of... a lot of note-taking. But we've got a ton of stuff here, and I'm really excited about what we've got.
But, other than that, what had I done? I did get a copy of Blood Bowl for the PC for Father's Day.
Oh, excellent. I've got that.
I'm very excited to try that game out. You've got it, so we can play each other online.
I've got it, yeah. I've got the Dark Elf patch, so I can play them. Although I've been playing with the Lizardmen online right now.
I've never played a game of Blood Bowl, but everyone is telling me how cool it is, so... And now I got it for, like I said, for Father's Day, so I'm excited to play.
The fun part about Blood Bowl is that when you play a game, you keep stats of your team. Your team grows or shrinks or whatever, but your successes, your fortunes, and your foibles are all represented by the game. After the game, you actually, your star players can get better, and your...
And your players can get, can't they get, like, just killed and
they
stuff?
They can get killed. You can ultimately have a club fold because you don't have enough money or players. It's part of it.
I like that. I did pick up, I was listening to D6 Generation, and they had the guy on from PaintedFigs.com.
Okay.
Little plug for those guys. And he was talking about how they just started doing dipping as a service, as opposed to just straight painting.
Yeah.
And he explained how to do it, and he said to go buy some Minwax varnish, because it's way cheaper than the gaming varnish that, I forget what company. It's not GW. It's Flames of War or one of these other companies. They sell like the varnish, and it's like $30 for their can. I bought the exact same thing at like Home Depot for about $6. But basically, the way he explained it, and I looked online, like, I'm going to just do it for, like, for my night goblins, because I got like 60 more of them, and I don't feel like doing all that painting.
You might as well go the mass route for those guys.
And it's he's like, you know, paint the cloaks black, the face green, the teeth white, the eyes red, just your base coat, and then instead of doing all the highlighting and shading and stuff, you dip them in the varnish, and it's kind of like a wash.
Okay.
But it just fills it in, but it also, because it's tinted, because it's got a brown tint to it, it adds in that color, so the teeth look dirty, the face, I mean, it adds to it. I saw it online.
It's a bit like an ink for the whole thing, you just dip it in there and...
Yeah.
Okay.
Although they suggested, and I would probably agree with them, that some people just literally dip it in and pull it out of the jar, but you can get... You know, it can get drippy and other spots.
Yeah.
They still suggested brushing it on, but okay. Brushing on the varnish, and because it's colored.
Well, dipping seems fast if you're going with night goblins, but
yeah, I mean I'm not going to use it for like my fancy troops, but for the stuff that I'm going to be hoarding, like, you know, I have 60 night goblins and I just got 60 more.
Yeah.
That's going to be a nice quick way to paint. So I got that.
Actually, it's funny because what you're describing, it's that's almost like one of those mistake lessons that taught me how to paint. I was painting a Titan, which is from Titan Legions.
Uh-huh.
And I was painting it a bone color. I kind of like the bone color scheme. I accidentally, my brush knocked into a pot of black paint, covered the whole damn thing from head to toe. And, you know, I all I could do was throw it in the water as fast as I can to wash as much of that off. And when I pulled it out, everything had this fantastic shading. Like, it looked like it had smoke scoring all over it. It looked perfect. And it's like, oh, this is the lesson of washing, you know.
So I got that. I'm going to try that out. Hopefully, before the next show, I want to try that out. And then I've still been trudging through the second book in the Sundering series from
the Black Library.
I finished Malekith. I'm reading Shadow King. I was kind of reading it on and off at night.
Is this considered a sequel to Malekith?
Yeah. Oh, this is book two.
Oh, I was hoping it'd be about Malekith the whole time.
No. I don't know what the third book. Well, the third book's gonna. Malekith should be.
Well,
back
hopefully
in
it should be. You know, talk about Malekith some more and leave those fakers from.
Well, the series is called The Sundering. It's about the High Elves and the Dark Elves.
I like to think of it as the celebration of the Dark Elves.
It's just so annoying when you do that. You won't even admit that they're the ones who split off and chose to be evil.
I want you to imagine me like in a sports arena with a big foam number one and a big pendant that says "Go Dark Elves" and, you know, Drukhai number one, and those High Elves are, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they can be the ones selling the
hot
dogs.
And that's fine, but you have to at least admit that they were the splitters and they chose to go evil, and they're the ones who tore the place apart.
I admit nothing.
Then I guess we're done with that conversation.
So the book is good, then?
It's actually, the first book, like I said, with Malekith, there's a lot of adventure and a lot of, you know, he meets the dwarves, there's a lot of violence. You're reading it now.
I am reading it now. So what you're telling me is that when it goes back to the High Elves, it becomes less interesting.
No, it's really interesting, but part of you get is you actually get, you get a look at some of the politics.
So it's more dreary?
No.
It's more of a shame?
Yeah, I'm going to get mad. I'm going to get really angry.
So it sounds like you're saying that High Elves are a bunch of namby-pambies.
No.
Crying milksops, weepy-eyed...
And focusing on the Anars, Aleth Anar, obviously he's a Shadow King.
Yeah.
He's from Nagareth, so he's still got the curse on him. You can see him fighting with that anger. I mean, the fact that his whole clan, except for him, was pretty much wiped out. It's just he is just like hell bent on revenge and just.
Well, the Nagarithi were always the bloodthirsty ones.
Yeah.
Compared to normal High Elves, teasing aside, it sounds fascinating. I will be picking that up from
you. It's such a cool book because you got his shadows, the shadows, his shadow warriors, and the one thing he keeps talking about is how the Druki or Druchi or however you pronounce it.
I've on the computer game Battle March, I've heard it pronounced as Drukhai.
Okay.
And that's the only direction.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So the Drukhai. You know, he says they have taken over. They revel in the night and the darkness, but we will make them fear the shadows. Those are ours, you know. And he's like, it's really cool. Plus, you get to see these cool battles between High Elves and Dark Elves with the sorceress, and you get all this just the mad fanatical, practically naked, just Dark Elf, you know, berserkers running in with knives, giving their lives. One of the coolest things is when they actually have a battle and they bring in the Dark Elf. general coming in on, or the captain coming in on a dragon, and seeing how A, they're very rare, and B, how that one guy on a dragon can really turn the battle, and how terrifying it is. It was just, it's really amazing. I never gave much credence to high elves or dark elves. I mean, I know they're good armies, but they just weren't anything that really interested me.
You're talking about in the game?
Yes.
Okay.
Just, I mean, I do play wood elves.
Well, you do have wood elves now, so you...
And Harrison plays high elves, and you play dark elves.
Right.
But it was just, high elves and dark elves just...
High elves and dark elves in the game, according to the 8th edition, I see them as, they've done, I don't know if this was done on purpose, but they have managed to,
make them more similar.
They're genuinely two sides of the same coin. They effectively share abilities.
Yeah.
And it's now in troop choices where you see the differences between them.
Right.
They've done a very good job with that.
It's cool when they bring in the Hydras and they kill the handlers and the Hydra goes after the other Hydras or the other Manticores because they're their natural enemies. Seeing that, you know, stuff you see in the game where it's like, you know, you roll on, once you kill the handlers, you roll on the
monster reaction table. It's a leadership test.
Yeah, and it just starts going, I mean, this of all the, I mean, I liked it better than the two, I will say I liked it better than the two Sigmar books I've read so far in the trilogy. I haven't read Nagash yet.
Nagashman, you got to pick it up. It's fantastic.
I got it. I just haven't read it yet.
Yeah. I got it from you. They're obviously your books.
But this Shadow King is probably my favorite. And I've read, like I said, I've read the Bone Ripper and Thankful series. I've read all the Gotrek and Felix novels. Gav Thorpe is, I mean, I love his work as it is. Shadow King, it's blowing me away. I love it.
Gav Thorpe before he was dedicated to the fiction, was a big part of Games Workshop's rule set. And
right.
He had a great deal to do with many of the High Elf, Dark Elf, and I don't know about Wood Elf, but I mean, he's been across the board in terms of designing rules. So this is an interesting direction for him to go, and I'm glad to see that he's been so successful with it.
It's fantastic. But I've taken up enough of the floor here. So what have you been doing other than writing down?
What have I been doing in the world of gaming in general? I have been obviously I've been glued to the 8th edition book. I don't have a copy, but game stores do, and I've had to share it with other people in the game store. So I've done my best taking notes. I've had some great Theory Hammer sessions. I was talking a guy named Steve. I can't think of his last name on the air right now, but I met him.
Steve.
Well, he's going to be running the Warhammer tournament at Unique Gifts and Games, and he and I had a nice chat about 8th edition. He plays Lizardmen, and we're trying to going back and forth on which way we think the game's going to go. What else have I been doing besides Warhammer? I haven't had any chance to play games because, for one thing, you've been in Disney World.
Well, you know.
But you know what else I've been doing, and you're going to hit me over the head? I have been rereading. I've been wanting to get back into other miniature games, and I picked up the Mark II version of War Machine. I really like it. And it's funny, you mentioned last episode that if you like science fiction, maybe I should be playing War Machine, and it kind of sparked me. Because I used to play the first edition of War Machine when my friend Brian Steele was still working for the company.
Right.
And I wanted to see where they went with the rules, because the problem with Mark One of War Machine was that they exposed some glaring weaknesses, some unbalance, and it seems like they've cleaned that up.
There are things I like about War Machine. It's just Warhammer's my favorite game.
Oh,
obviously.
Yeah. I'm not giving up on Warhammer. Warhammer's the game of choice for me, but
right.
I like the variety too.
Yeah, I don't know if I just, it's with the time I'm spending on this between me and Harrison and helping him build his armies and building my armies and helping paint and stuff, I haven't had time for another one. I did pick up Malifaux.
Which we'll play.
And I do like that because you can buy a box and have an entire army ready to go, and it's like $35 for the rules and $35 for a box of the guys from basically that's enough to run it, it seems. And then so I mean, for what, $105 plus tax, you could have your two skirmish groups and your rule set.
See, that's all I like. That's why I like Blood Bowl. That's why I like maybe Necromunda or Mordheim, those kind of games. Because, yeah, for the investment of, like, one small team, you've got the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I mean, I really liked the fluff on Malifaux, which is kind of why I was flipping through the book and why I chose that one and picked it up. I'm not a huge skirmish game player, per se. I love skirmish games,
but it doesn't translate well into Warhammer. Warhammer is meant for regiments. Other games are meant for warbands and skirmish.
Right.
The one I liked that was fantasy-based was called Chronopia. It didn't have a huge following, but I always felt that the fluff was some of the most interesting I'd ever read. But that's neither here nor there. That game is in the dust, face down in the mud.
Yep. So what else have you been doing? Any more StarCraft?
You know, unfortunately, StarCraft right now, the beta seems to be on hold perhaps forever. There was an implication on their website that they might go into a phase two of their beta, but it's so close to release date that I haven't been able to play. You jump on and the server's down. At this point, I'm waiting for the game to come out. I understand that they might have a graphics update, which is interesting to me because the game looks beautiful as it is. But no, I haven't been playing it. I wish I could. I finished Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, you did, yeah.
Outstanding. Outstanding. In hindsight, I look back over the entire game, and I have to say, I recommend it to nearly anyone. Some of the things that make your stomach churn just a little bit about Grand Theft Auto, some of the really dastardly, ugly things that you can choose to do on your own spare time when playing that game, are just not options in this one.
See, that I might even like that a little more.
I loved it. And the graphics, I can't believe I'm saying this, the graphics put Grand Theft Auto 4 to shame. And Grand Theft Auto 4 looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And this is even better.
So,
The ending is terrific. I won't give it away, but the ending is terrific.
Yeah. I haven't done much with my Xbox. Before we left, I actually logged in, kind of looked around, kind of updated a few things. I did play a little bit more of Rock Band.
I haven't touched that in forever.
I actually spent half the time going through what they have new to purchase, like new downloadable songs. And Harrison and the girls found out that they have Lady Gaga songs for Rock Band, and now I have to go buy some points because
you downloaded Lady Gaga on purpose?
I have not, but everybody wants it. Like, well, you know, we have Rock Band parties sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, the guys from Christopher and my wife Heather work for the same company, and sometimes we have little Rock Band parties. You know, a bunch of the people from work come by, and we'll just sit around and eat snacks and have a few drinks and play Rock Band. And they all like Lady Gaga, so there's only like four songs, but I had to download them because they want. So that'll be when I go and get a drink.
Yeah, I would think that would be when I go and get two drinks. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't play the guitar right now. I've got two drinks.
Yeah, my poker face. Oh, my God. Yeah, my 4-year-old loves that song, too. Poker face.
I would genuinely rather play My Humps. I'd rather sing My Humps. I drive these brothers crazy. I do it on the daily.
Oh, stop.
My humps. Check it out. All right.
Okay.
And that was the Black Eyed Peas Hammer, and now back to Garage Hammer. Thanks.
Oh, we do have a couple of shout-outs. That not from sponsors. The sponsor shout-outs, which, by the way, if you want to either praise or dog out your local gaming group, you want to, if you're a fantasy player and your local store has a 40K gaming group and you want to tease them, or you've got another gaming group that they're playing an army that you think is a cheese army and you want to call them out, or maybe you just want to say hi to your best friends and get their names mentioned on the show, once again, you can go to our link. It's $10. You can get anything put up you want that's not obscene, because this is a clean show. But we'll pretty much say almost anything you want. But we have a couple of shout-outs for ourselves.
Absolutely.
Why don't you take yours first? Because I thought that was really cool what you had.
You know, I wanted to get a little bit more information on the Chaos Dwarf book. As you all may know by now, I am a dedicated Chaos Dwarf player, and with the 8th edition coming out, I had some questions about what the state of the Dwarves of Chaos GT Indie Army book was going to be. I actually decided to write an email to Kevin Coleman, who is the lead game designer.
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin. I wrote the guy an email, and he was nice enough to respond within a day. And I don't have exact dates for you, but he mentioned that he and Matt Burdoff, the head artist, the conceptual artist for the book, they are planning to do a version 2.0 I don't have a date for you, and I don't think he has a date either, but they're going to be waiting until the 8th edition book comes out, and they'll be having a look at which way they need to go to clean up the rules to mesh with 8th edition. The guy wrote me back right away, so thank you very much for taking the time. So for you Chaos Dwarf players out there who are using the GTND book, it sounds like, pay attention to their websites. I don't have a link for you right now. I'll see if I can get one. But when they do come out with something, we'll have an update. So that's what they intend to do for the GTND. They will do a 2.0. Thank you, Kevin.
And that's not even just a shout-out. I think we just broke a piece of news before any of the other shows that they are definitely going to be doing a 2.0.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first on your ration.
You heard it here first. I'd also like to give a shout-out. Obviously, this is our second show. After our first show, we've got our we have Garage Hammer Podcast on Facebook. And we have Garage Hammer on Twitter. And I was looking
Join the Garage Hammer group on Facebook.
Yeah, it's under, just search Garage Hammer Podcast. I think if you search Garage Hammer, you'll find it. But it is actually listed as Garage Hammer Podcast. I got someone who joined the group who I didn't really recognize. I mean, the first people who joined our group are obviously people who knew us.
Sure.
And I recognized the name, I kept looking at it, and I realized it was Chuck from the Wogcast. And so he joined the group, and of course, you did the whole Facebook thing, we friended each other. And then after I friended Chuck, I friended Joe Flesh from Wogcast. We want to give a big shout out to the Wogcast and to Joe and Chuck. Not only did they give us some nice and really, really helpful comments, but, they offered to help out, if we had any questions or anything like that. And they actually, Joe sent me a little piece of code because I was having trouble figuring out how to put these little banner things up.
That's right.
And he's like, here, use this. It'll work perfect.
Yep.
So to Joe and Chuck, if you're listening to episode 2, thank you guys very much.
Thank you for your support. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And
I think we are a lot like them in that this is just another extension of the hobby for us. Now we've got building models and painting and gaming, and now we've got this and this little community of podcasters, with Podhammer and Wogcast and some of these other ones. Bad Dice, Ben Curry's.
Ben Curry's with Bad Dice.
Helen Hammer. We're all sort of together in this. I don't necessarily see us all as competing, but we've all got our own take on it.
It's not really competition. I mean, there's time for all of it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not trying to compete really either, but I think it's nice.
I don't want to compete at all.
Yeah, I think it's nice that like I said, Joe and Chuck were lend a hand right away, offered a hand to us, and so I want to thank. I wanted to give them a shout out and some thanks. And you can find the link to their show on our site. If you look on the right hand column, it says other shows you should be listening to.
And Wogcast is listed right there. Give them a try; you'll enjoy them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think we should... Oh, before we take a break, we have two new segments. Yay! As the show is developing, we're going to be having new different segments. I'm still trying to figure out how the heck to do battle reports because we only get the one blog page on the blog. Guys, we are not that computer savvy. So, as we're figuring things out, we don't have a forum yet. We're going to figure it out. We haven't figured out how to post pictures and link it up to Flickr or Flutter or whatever the other... Shutter bug or whatever it is, the things. We're working on it, but we do have two new segments.
That's right. We are actually going to be, when we learn how to play 8th edition, as the game's not even out yet, we're doing our best, but as we learn how to play 8th edition, we're going to be attempting to walk two new players who, through the show, are interested in learning how to play. And we're going to be documenting that. So not only will we be teaching them how to play on the air, but we'll be able to walk new players through as well. And it sounds like one of them at least is interested in either demons or vampire counts.
Well, I have a vampire count army, so he can use that to play to get to learn if he likes them. We don't have a demon army between any of the three of us. But
no, but he's looking at prices now. He's interested in picking one up.
That's cool. That's really cool. What are their names?
Tom Bertolt, who's a good friend of mine I met through work, and actually they're both through work, Ryan Noah. They're both interested in playing, and now Tom, I think, is going to have to borrow armies from us for a bit.
That's fine.
Yeah, no problem.
But basically, our whole take is we're all, it's new for everybody. 8th edition is new for everybody. Those of us who are playing in 7th, like I said, I've only ever played 7th edition. I've only been playing the game for 3 years. I know you started back in like 5th edition.
4th edition,
fourth
yeah.
4th edition. So those of us who are, you know, we're all new. Of course, veterans are going to have a much quicker learning curve, I think, because they're just making adjustments, not learning a new game.
Effectively, that's true, yes.
But, we, you know, like I said, like we said last episode, we hope to bring in new people with this podcast, and we have. We've got two guys who want to learn how to play. They're our project. They'll be on the show in the next couple of episodes. They'll get a couple of games in. They'll come on and talk about their games. And so anybody who's new, or if you've got friends who are, excuse me, I'm got a little belch there. If you've got friends who are new, who are interested in playing, get them listening, because we are going to be walking through new people, and they're going to be, you know, having the same type of questions that new P players have. I think this is really exciting. I think
I can't
really
wait.
Cool.
I can't wait. Being able to actually, yeah, sort of document walking through a game and the basic tactics, the things that, you know, veterans might take for granted, but sometimes it just pays off to hear it again because it gives you a new perspective.
I don't know how many times I've listened to different podcasts and they've said, oh, you really? Wait, you can do that? That's how that works?
That's why I don't think that any of us compete with anyone else, because the game is not mathematical. It's all subjective, and there's 100 different ways to look at an idea and how to solve it.
Right, so. Right. The second segment was actually suggested by a listener, I think it was Greg Rice.
Greg Rice.
Greg, after hearing the first show, said we should let Harrison, my son, talk a little more. He enjoyed hearing Harrison, who turned 9 and a half today. 9 and a half.
His very grand birthday.
Yes, December 21st is his birthday, so June 21st, he's got, it's his half birthday today. He was all excited, telling us yesterday this is going to be his half birthday. He's 9 and a half. He's been playing, actually, for over a year, about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
He really likes the game. His learning curve is, you know, a little different, being 9 and a half, but he's actually...
He's a surprisingly skilled player.
Yeah, he's...
Especially with his old man coaching him from behind.
Well, you know, you gotta coach him. He's learning.
Anytime I play Harrison, I'm playing two people.
It is kind of, well, Harrison... Okay, when Harrison beat you, the High Elves against the Dark Elves, he took none of my advice. He took only his own advice. He did not listen.
I played a conceptual army, and I played like a fop, so... I got what I deserved.
And a lot of bad dice rolling. 40 shots, 5 hit, none wound.
I think we've talked about my bad dice rolling in the past.
We are going to have a little side segment one day where I tell some of the tales of the triple and double botches when we played Vampire the Masquerade.
Yeah.
And the whole game turned on Christopher's insanely bad roll. And suddenly the whole group was running for their lives.
It's funny because I can almost feel it coming. You know, I can almost feel it coming. It's just, these you'll switch dice quickly. You'll try not to throw them through a window, but...
It's fun. It's still fun. But yes, we have a new segment, and it's entitled The Sigmar Youth. Not to be confused with the Hitler Youth.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, you know, they've got a very Germanic background with the Empire, and when I called it Sigmar Youth, somebody pointed out to me that we don't want to call it the Hitler Youth.
No, really don't want to call it that.
But so, Harrison will have a segment, hopefully later in this show. We're going to record it and put it in there. Basically, he's going to talk about his point of view, 2 to 3 minutes, just a little blurb, Harrison's little rant about what he thinks about his gaming lately. If a 9 and a half year old can do it, don't tell me that a 16 or a 17 year old can't, or someone even older. If you're new to the game, it's not that difficult to learn. And I think with the new 8th edition rules, it's going to be even easier.
A little bit easier. This is, I think we're going to get into this later, but if anything, the 8th edition rules are sort of a way for Games Workshop to embrace those younger players. I don't think it's going to exclude too many of the older players, but we'll get into that.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we take ourselves a little break? We'll come back and we'll get into Warhammer a little bit.
I think that's a great idea. So we'll be back in a few moments. It'll be seconds for you, but depending on how long Chris is in the bathroom, might be a few minutes for us.
I don't even have to go. I'm just going to hang out in there.
So now we're on a break.
This is the song while we're taking a break, because there's not really any break. We just pause the tape. We might be going to the bathroom, we might be having a snack, but now the break is over, so we're gonna come right back.
Hey,
I made that up off the top of my head, and you guys chimed in with the harmonies there. Thank you.
It's because you're extremely talented.
We are extremely talented. So hope you guys like my little going on a break song, because we don't have any music to put in for it. And if we just say we're going on a break and then the show goes right into the next segment,
we were so good at that. I think we should quit our day jobs.
No.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm on summer vacation. I happen to like my day job right now. So.
Me too. I love my job.
So, okay, welcome back, everybody. And we are starting up our new segment, Sigmar Youth. The Sigmar Youth, actually has a rank and force of one, but is one very powerful little boy.
Unit strength one.
So, I introduce to you my son, Harrison Witek. Take it away, Harrison.
I'm Harrison Witek.
Closer and louder, buddy.
Hi, I'm Harrison Witek. I would like to start out this show on how I got into gaming.
So how did you get involved in gaming, Harrison?
Well, I saw my dad playing, and I saw all the different armies and pieces, and I'm like, okay, this looks so cool. I have to play this.
So then when you saw us gaming, you wanted to be part of it, so you started looking through different army books, and you made your decision?
Of High Elves.
High Elves. Okay, so what made you decide on High Elves as opposed to other different armies? Why did you choose them?
Because in all sorts of games that I like doing, I like using magic, and, well, they hit first, so it's an easier beginner army.
So you thought that High Elves may be a better choice than Lizardmen? Lizardmen also have a good spellcasting option.
Yes.
But you decided...
I was torn between the Lizardmen because of the Slam Mage Priest, because, well, I like using magic.
Right.
And... But then I thought that I don't know how I picked the High Elves. I think it's because it was an easier beginner army.
Was it the
bit of a suggestion?
The Always Strikes first, you thought, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you still like them? Are they still your favorite choice?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
So who's your second choice?
Skaven.
Skaven? Do you see yourself playing with him soon?
Yeah.
What would be your favorite thing about playing the Skaven?
That you can cheat in a combat as long as you're slave rats.
You can cheat in combat? Is that what you said?
I can shoot into combat.
Oh, shoot into combat. Yeah, well, Skaven slaves. Yeah, yeah. Well, they're very...
I remember that. I'd like to chime in here just for a second. We did kind of... I think you and I both kind of angled him toward the High Elves because of the Always Strikes First. Being a brand new player and being young, that Always Strike First, if he made a mistake in combat, he still got that good chance to get some hits off.
Well, he's going to get every chance to get hits off.
Right, but you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's more forgiving if you make mistakes.
True, but at the same time, the High Elf does require a bit more skill. You can't just jump into every combat and expect to walk away.
You have to be really cagey.
But I mean,
cagey is the word.
As compared to Lizardmen, say, I think there was a little bit more forgiving, I think, with him. And there was a little less, you know, a little less of a learning curve that he had to follow with that Always Strike First. But then he was struggling between Lizardmen and Skaven last Christmas trying to decide what army he wanted to go with. I know that our friend Brad, who plays the
Vampire Counts,
yep.
He doesn't like the new Lizardmen at all, so he was just bagging on them. I think that helped Harrison.
The Jedi mind-tricked me.
No, but that Skaven army's awesome, and Harrison did get a heck of a lot of Skaven for Christmas. So.
Which you have yet to play.
Yeah, if I ever get them built.
Get going. That's what you did on your summer vacation. When you get back to school, you can write your first report. I built rats. I glued rats together. 450 rats.
So you're asking how you got into gaming. So we know you picked your High Elves and you like them. What other games do you like to play? Because you actually are kind of a gamer. You play lots of games. What other games do you like to play?
I was trying to get into playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Face the microphone. Yeah, I don't have time to run that to Dungeon Master a dungeon campaign right now for Dungeons and Dragons.
I'd love to run something. It just takes time, that's all.
And War Machine looks pretty cool.
What else do you play, though? You've got, Arcane Legions?
Arcane Legions,
And you can mention things that aren't board games.
Say
you play.
Say it
I play a bunch of video games. I've been playing those since I was about 4 or 5.
Are you playing more on the Xbox or more on your DS right now?
More on my DS, totally.
What's your number one game on the DS?
I have to say it's a... I think it's a game called Legend of Zelda, Zelda Spirit Tracks.
Oh, so it's a... Okay, so it's Zelda.
Yeah,
okay.
Zelda. I just love Zelda.
You weren't playing that on vacation. You were playing that Pokemon takeoff.
Spectrobes?
Thing. Spectrobes.
Yeah, I don't know why I was playing that.
Well, if you like it, you like it. Have you caught them all? That's the real question.
No, not you have to evolve them from fossils.
Have you evolved and then caught them all?
No.
You better get going and catching.
Okay.
He wants to play Descent. He says when I get Descent, he's very interested in playing Descent.
And Blood Bowl.
And Blood Bowl.
Well, we've got it on both PC and we've got it on board game now, so we can do both.
Oh, he plays Pirates Online.
Okay.
I was looking at Lego Universe.
Yep.
I played Warhammer The Age of Reckoning.
The online game?
Yeah.
With the family filters on, I hope.
No.
Well, he's only allowed to play when I'm around.
Okay.
And he pretty much, he's not a big team joiner, but yeah, I filtered out the foul language.
Okay, yeah. Well, you never know what you're going to get with those online games.
Yeesh, yeah.
It's like, hi, I'm a jerk, I'm going to say mean things, and I'm not going to be any fun.
But his mom says he's not allowed to, that's one of the reasons we got him the Disney Pirates Online, because it's family friendly.
Yeah.
Because he's not allowed to play war unless I'm in the room, actually physically there, even with the filters on. I got to be there.
I'll put it to you this way. I've played plenty of World of Warcraft, and there are still moments where you think you've seen it all, and just someone comes in and just lets it all hang out with text, and you wonder how these people ever get along with anyone.
Exactly.
Well, all right. So,
what are you looking forward to in 8th edition, Brody?
Not nerfing the High Elves.
Not nerfing the High Elves. Well, I don't think they're going to get nerfed. The two nerfs you have are your...
White Lions and Sword Masters.
True, but they're still very powerful.
Yes, they are.
They are very powerful. You still have the option to charge with them.
Yes, I do, don't I?
Mm-hmm. In which case, they're still likely to go first with their initiative 5.
Yeah.
And 4 ranks of Spearmen.
And if I use the Horde, I get 5!
You're going to go Horde also?
Probably.
Plus his archers being allowed to volley with the high skill for shooting. I mean, you got good stuff there.
Yeah, you got some power.
Don't die.
What's that?
Yes, I do.
Yes,
don't
you do.
Die.
Yes, you do. Well, get your Skaven built.
That's a good thing.
So we'll have to get you involved when we get a couple of games going for the 8th edition party.
Yeah.
We'll have to have you on for a battle report.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Oh yeah.
Oh, 8th edition party. We didn't mention that in any part of the show we recorded. Unique Gifts and Games, Friday, July 9th. They usually close at 9. They're staying open till midnight to sell the book at midnight. I will be there. You will be there. And if I
will be there.
I'm pretty certain Harrison's going to be there because, well, Mom is going to be out of town with Morgan at a Twilight convention.
Oh, really?
And Kira's going to be at Grandma and Grandpa's spending the night that night. So Harrison's going to have to come with us. So... come to Unique Gifts and Games, and hey, you get to meet us, and you get to meet Harrison, and we'll be there getting games and playing games and doing stuff.
And things.
All right, so anything else you wanted to say, Harrison?
When you go to UGG, you can't do the stuff without the things.
Can't do the stuff without the things.
Stuff and things.
Spoken from a real 9.5-year-old.
Absolutely.
That's Sigmar Youth.
And this is our first episode of the Sigmar Youth. We hope you enjoyed it. And we're going to stop recording here real quick, and we'll be back to the show in just a few moments.
All right. See you soon. All right.
Okay. And we're back.
All right. We're going to get right into it. Let's talk about some Warhammer, Dave. Well, we have...
Yeah, might as well. We've been talking for like an hour. Might as well bring up Warhammer.
I know, I can't talk about StarCraft. We might as well talk about something.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into it. So the 8th edition book is out in stores, not to buy, but to demo. I've been spending the last couple of days taking notes. So where do we begin? First of all, one of the first rumors to come out was back when the Beastmen book came out, there was speculation as to what order the magic phase is going to take. People thought that maybe it would go to the first phase of the game. Not true. It is... movement phase, and then magic phase, shooting phase, close combat, just the same way it was before. So that hasn't changed a bit. But how do I even go into the changes? There's so many. But
well, you know what? I think a nice thing is just overall, what's your first... I mean, I didn't read as much of the book nearly as you did. I got your notes. You mm-hmm. sent them to me at Disney.
Oh, 15 pages, yeah.
Yes, I read them, and then I got to the game store. I was actually with it for about 2 hours total only. I got some information that you weren't able to get. You told me what you didn't get, and I worked on that. But what's your overall impression? Like, are you after reading this, are you jazzed for it?
I'm extremely jazzed. It is going to be, I would say, a slightly simpler game than 7th edition in some ways. I'm not saying that in a negative context. There's nothing wrong with making a game a little easier.
Okay, well, we'll pause here.
Okay.
Sit lower. You're way over top of the mic. I want to make sure you're just as loud as me, because Okay, so let's start that over again.
Okay.
Okay, so what's your overall impression of it?
Okay, well, I think 8th edition is going to be... How do I put this? Okay, for starters, they've obviously put a huge emphasis on bringing back the power of infantry. There's just no denying that that block troops are the way to go, or at least it's the initial strategy. Anyone who's going to be building basic strategy for 8th edition is going to be starting with block troops. That's where the power is. I think the game is going to be slightly simpler in some ways than 7th edition was, and I don't mean that in a negative context. I think that's actually in a way a good thing. Dave, I was talking with you earlier about old grumblers who play 7th edition and the old grumbler society, it's going to be simpler, what a dumb game, I'm going to drop out. Well, they're not going to make the game, it's not going to be turning into Monopoly anytime soon. It's still going to be a complicated game. If you exclude new players from getting involved in a game, if you make it so complicated that no new players ever come in and, you only lose players, then ultimately the game is killed. So you have to open the door to let new players in. And I think 8th edition is appealing to the changes necessary to bring block troops back, but it also opens the door for new players. So I would say that it's going to be a success. Financial success, and I think the game itself will be fun to play.
Yeah, we get it. Well, one of the things you hear a lot is that younger, newer players seem to gravitate toward 40K. Some people think it's because they like science fiction, they like having guns, they like, they like the guns and the spaceships and the tanks.
Well, I think the tactics of the game are simpler.
I don't
need to maneuver for a charge. I just need to see you and I can kill you.
It's a much I think 40K, like it or hate it, and like I said, I don't hate 40K. I don't play the game. I think we both said love the fluff, not so impressed with the game itself.
If someone dropped an army into my lap, I'd play. I wouldn't say no. It's just that I have my preference. I'm a fantasy player. That's what I like more.
Right.
I like the armies.
But I think that a lot of the younger players, I mean, you can say they're getting into it because they like science fiction more than fantasy. Dude, I know so many people who love fantasy. I know so many teenagers, being a high school teacher, who, Lord of the Rings and fantasy and all that type of stuff is their cup of tea. I just think that 40K is an easier game to learn and to get into. And I don't think this is moving more towards a 40K style of play so much, but they did simplify it, I think, and I think that is going to help bring in more new players. I think that's a good thing.
Maneuvering the table is going to be easier. The terrain rules have changed significantly, and it does make it easier for your army to get across the board. For example, the last game that you and I played, I had some hobgoblin sneaky get stuck in a forest for the majority of the game because I couldn't maneuver out of it. There was no safe place for me to go, so I kept having to go back into the forest, and they wasted the entire game there.
Right. Yeah.
Now
exactly.
That's not going to happen. Now they're just going to walk right through it, and it's really not going to be much of an issue.
Well, and that's, like I said, making it more accessible to the new player, I think, is an important move. Basically because I would just like to see more people playing fantasy. And that's a completely selfish thing on my part. But
I don't think it's selfish. I mean, it makes sense. If you play a game, why get involved unless you think there are other players?
When you walk into a Games Workshop and almost every table has got 40K going on and you get a new player coming in there and everybody's in there. I mean, even Unique Gifts and Games, they have... Tuesday nights is 40K night. That's when all the 40K players show up on Tuesday nights from 6 to 9. They play. There isn't a fantasy night because there's like you and me, basically. And even a couple of the kids like Jacob and a couple of the other kids. Jacob's now, he's going from 8th grade to high school. So he's not playing as much because he's discovered girls. But
As you do.
But it just seems like when you see these other people playing it and it's an easier game to learn, it just seems that more and more people gravitate this way. I think this is really going to stop. In fact, Unique Gifts and Games, Kathleen just told Harrison and I when we were there on Saturday that there is going to be every other Monday is going to be fantasy, Warhammer Fantasy Night.
Good.
We don't have the exact date set because we haven't chosen when we're going to start. And that's partly due to the fact that the book's coming out and you were there talking to a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, there was, what, 5 or 6 or 7 guys there you were talking to. And now they realize that there's more than just, you know, they're coming in pairs. The guys who, like, you and I, we play each other constantly. We play Harrison, you know, our little group. As they're coming in pairs to see the book, they're finding the other pairs. And so there's going to start being more fantasy. I'd really like to see a lot more players getting into this. I still think this is the more fun game.
Well, with 8th edition coming out, yeah, it does. It draws people out of the woodwork to see what the changes are to their armies. They kind of you have to reinvent your army.
Mm-hmm.
You have to redesign that. I've been playing with numbers for the past couple of days. Not that I know exactly how the armies are going to be. It should be pointed out, I've seen the new book. I have an idea of how the game is going to go. But this new errata that they're going to be coming out with on the day the book comes out is really the other half of the change.
Is it coming out on the 6th or the 10th? I read.
Actually, I've heard both, but I'm not sure. It's going to be within a couple of days.
I'd like to see it come out on the 6th to give the players who already play a chance to get their armies ready so that when the rule book comes out, they can really just jump into playing.
Yeah.
If
you're veteran gamers out there, effectively, it really does seem like this is going to be something akin to the Ravening Hordes.
Much bigger.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're not going to do away with the army books, but they're, I guess it's
15 army books, though, have to be errated.
And it's a pretty
big change.
Yeah. The spell lists I see is needing some updates. Multiple magic items need massive updates.
All the spell lists are going to get updates.
They have to.
I think the biggest question for me with the errata are, is there going to be points adjustments?
I don't know.
If a unit, I mean, there's no way that anybody, if you need 2 ranks to take
to
away,
ranks.
To flank, to break ranks.
Two ranks to break ranks,
then
yeah.
You're going to need, I mean, seriously, I mean, you used to only need 5, unit strength of 5, which
unit
is going.
Unit strength of 5.
With 40 and 50 point cavalry models, you know, your Chaos Knights and your Blood Knights, at 40 and 50 points a pop, 10 models is a quarter of your army. Nobody's going to be able to take those unless that's your whole army. So I'm wondering if they're going to adjust the points. Plus, with certain magic items. I mean, certain magic items are going to change. The, what's it? It's, who has it? The Warriors of Chaos. The things that can force a miscast now.
The Black Tongue?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
And the things that can move on the miscast table. I mean, these things, are they going to change in point value? Some things are going to become useless.
Well, they may not.
And things are going to become super, all of a sudden, with the change, unless they change how the item works. Some items are going to be real cheap for what they do, and some items are going to be real expensive for not doing a whole heck of a lot. With the new rules. So I'm wondering if they're going to actually go in and readjust the points values.
Depends on how much time they put into it. And allow me to get my quick Chaos Dwarf shout. I know. Go ahead and roll your eyes.
No, do it. Do it. I like them too.
This is my opinion. And Games Workshop, if ever you had my attention, now would be the time to grant it to me. Please listen to me. This is your opportunity to clean up all of these army lists. We, as the players of your games, have given you a lot of our time, a lot of our money, and this would be an excellent time to tip your hat to Chaos Dwarf players and say to them, thank you for sticking with us. You can very easily, in your errata, include, if this is effectively a Ravening Hordes, you can effectively give us a new Get You By list for Chaos Dwarves and for Dogs of War. Please do that. Please do it. All right, well, that's enough for Chaos Dwarves. I love them. Why not give them some attention? You don't have to give us a new army. I don't think you're going to do it. How about at least a Get You By?
Yeah.
And why not throw the Hell Cannon on there, since they're Chaos Dwarves?
And I'm also looking at, now, I know we don't play a lot of specialty characters, but
there are
people who do.
Right.
And I'm looking at this right now. I mean, I'm holding the Warriors of Chaos book. Archaon the Everchosen is a whopping 685 points.
Yeah, you would
which
need...
Which is 1370 times 2, 2740. You'd have to play almost a 3,000-point army to field him, and he would be your only Lord on the field, because...
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. He's...
Yeah. I just like
you,
I said,
you would need a spectacular epic game to field him.
Certain players love, I know certain players adore specialty characters.
Let's get into that then, just so you understand what we're talking about. It is confirmed. For points, when you are building an army, slots are sort of out for characters. Instead, it's 25% of your total army list is going to be made up of maximum for lords, 25 max for heroes.
25 max for rare.
50 max for special.
And minimum 25% for core, which I think is good. Dude,
Which explains Arcan. You simply can't take them for smaller games anymore, which is fine.
Like I said, I've always...
Which is appropriate.
I've always taken a lot of core. And I know maybe that's why I lose in tournaments so badly, but...
Well, you play... But your primary army are dwarves. You don't have the option. And I'm the same with my Chaos Dwarves. I don't see a practical way to not take expensive core units. I could take Hobgoblins, but that's a foolish
gesture.
But
even when I played the Wood Elves, I like taking a couple units of Dryads, a couple units of Gladeguard, a couple units of Gladeguard. I've always had like a 30-40% core army. In fact...
In those armies, though, I think that's where your strength is.
Right. In fact, I know some people kind of roll their eyes when I tell them I do this, but whenever I try out a new army, my first game, I take maybe one special or one rare choice. The rest is core.
That's not a hard, fast rule with me.
If the core is the backbone of your army, I'd like to... I've always found that when I try a new army, especially when I was learning the game, I'm still learning the game, when I'm learning how to play 7th edition, I liked taking a lot of core because I said... There's so many different special and rare units, and there's so many options that you start to get confused. Who does what? Who does this? So I started off with a big core army. If they're supposed to be the backbone of my army, let me learn how to play and fight with them.
I would agree with you.
And then I start adding in this. I add in this, but it's not like a hard and fast rule. First time I play them, I don't take any specials or rares, but I really do sort of flood the table with just massive amounts of core because. When that's what you have to work with, you're going to see what works and what doesn't, and then I understand them, and then I can tweak and fine-tune. I've always felt that special and rares, especially rares, where you're tweaking and fine-tuning and bringing in something big.
By the same token, if you take a special unit, I would expect a little more out of them.
Now,
bearing in mind that my primary legal army, if I could use that term, is the Dark Elves, my special choices are very good.
Oh well, yeah.
So I'm gonna maximize the number of those I could take because it maximizes the strength of my army. But that being said, I think I have good core choices.
Well, right. Like I said, that's not the hard and fast rule with every army. If I were to play a high elf army and start to learn high elves, of course, watching Harrison, I kind of know them. I would never, since they only have archers, spearmen, and then the combo, which I don't really rate the combo.
It's funny because recently I heard that there was some success with them. I can't speak of them other than that. But
once again, but I look at Lothar and Seagard and I say I'm paying more for he can do both, but never at the same time. So I'd rather just take one or the other and commit him to that. Maybe a unit of them, just because you never know where you're gonna need them, and they're flexible. But that to make a whole army of them because they're flexible, I think you're burning points.
I'm not sure. It's pure theory for me. Right. I understand the idea that you should focus, but in my Chaos Dwarf army, I find that my Demon Eaters, which are my spell casting, but they're just as good at fighting,
mm-hmm.
I actually find them to be tremendously useful.
Right.
Because I find that that's one of those rare cases where having both has really benefited
me. That's like in the Warriors of Chaos. You're always going to pick some sorcerers because they can fight and they can... do magic, and since it's two separate phases, you're not doing either or. You're casting magic, and then you're getting into a fight. At close combat, you can't do magic missiles, but I've got my magic users up there because they can fight, and they've got good armor, and they can still cast magic.
True.
But with these other units, you can't shoot and use your spears in the same... It's just not going to happen.
Well, Dave, let's transition this into the 8th edition rules. You're talking about core units. And
right.
I agree with you that you should learn how to play them, especially now.
Right.
Especially now, because, first of all, you've got a 25% minimum of your core units, and that's the half hour.
I love that cuckoo clock.
So what we're talking about here is... the reason that Dave and I both agree that core units and block units in general in 8th edition are a lot more effective and powerful than they used to be is because the rules are built around granting them new abilities that 7th edition didn't see. The first of which is a rule called supporting attacks. This means that the second rank can fight just as well as the first, up to a minimum or up to a maximum of one attack each. So that means if I have a unit of whatever, Empire Swordsmen, the first rank can attack, so can the second rank. Now, if you add spears to that, spears can attack an additional rank, so that would mean a large enough block can fight in three ranks.
Mm-hmm.
Add in the high elf ability, and that would mean four ranks.
Well, yeah. Do you want to go through? Do you want to go through your? There's Harrison already laughing.
And feeling pretty good about your feeling pretty good about your spears there, Harrison. Yeah, four ranks, right?
I know.
Well, that goes into something else, too, something else that I want to quickly mention about infantry. There's another rule called hordes. If I decided that I want to make that first rank 10 models wide, now the rule is I can attack with two supporting ranks. Make that spears four ranks. Make that high elf spears five ranks.
Yeah, high elf spearmen, if you literally had a unit of 50, they all could conceivably attack.
I will be pointing out to the world that my first intention, if I think it's going to work, is I'm not even going to go with my shields. I'm just going to go with raw numbers of the cheapest possible Dark Elf Spearmen. I simply see...
6 points?
6 points apiece? Why not? I can afford hordes now.
How much are yours, Spearmen?
Yours are a little bit more. Yeah.
But we're better.
Because we're not evil!
See, this is actually an interesting point. The High Elves and the Dark Elves, they're effectively the same thing now.
Yep.
I have built-in hatred, you have built-in always strikes first. But another important rule here is that it does not matter who charges. I think we talked about this last one,
right.
But it's confirmed. When you charge, that adds +1 to your combat resolution, but it does not determine who goes first. That is always determined by initiative.
Well, here, you want to go through, because you typed up this beautiful list, you want to kind of go through it by your points?
Yeah, so we can do that. Going.
What have you got here? We talked about turn order. Can I read your general principles here?
Go ahead.
Rules, new rules that are confirmed stuff. You always can check your distances.
Yes, Dave. The entire board is now measurable. At no point is there any question as to how far something is. That is a significant change.
Yep.
I don't believe I've ever seen Warhammer play that way before.
Fractions are always rounded up, which I like, because usually everybody always makes you round down. It's
That's nice interesting. My big question, does that also include building your army composition? Like, for example, I was doing some examples for myself on building armies, and when you build your army list... a common tournament level
is 2250,
which means that it's 562.5 points is your 25% max for characters, for your lords and for your heroes. Do you round that up as well, or is that considered rounding
down?
Well,
see, I think that's, honestly, you mentioned it this morning before mm-hmm. we started recording,
yeah.
And I've been thinking about it, and... In the game, while playing, you round up.
You round up.
But if 25% is the maximum... then you'd have to round down, because rounding up, you'd go over the 25%.
I completely agree with you, and I hope that's how most people decide it. But it's up to the
tournament. I also wonder
also
if the tournament points are going to change to 2,200 or 2,300 point armies.
I think anyone who plays High Elves, or possibly Dark Elves, or Chaos Warriors,
mm-hmm.
is going to want the highest possible value they can.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, either way, it's going to be something that's divisible by four. So you're not going to have a 2250.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You're going to have a 2200 or a 2300.
Which, by the way, explains why my friend from Unique Gifts and Games, Steve Lechman.
Yes, because we always had 1,500-point tournaments at Unique Gifts and Games, or that's what they always were, their tournaments.
Now he's doing 1,600.
1,600, because, well, actually, 1,500 is divisible also, but it becomes 375, and I think he just said it would be
3,400. I think he wanted an even number, yeah.
Yeah. What else we got here? What I like... You know, measuring, and when we get down to charging, that ability that when you measure and the charging, dude, charging is... Okay, and once again, with Christopher and I just playing each other, we're constantly going back and relooking at the rules and trying to make sure we have the rules right, because I think one of our biggest fears is that we play the game wrong and then we go to a tournament or go play with other people. We don't want to look stupid like we've been playing wrong the whole
time.
Well,
when we first started playing 7th edition, you and I had no place in a tournament. We were relearning the game. I think now we can go to a tournament, we'll be perfectly
well, right,
square.
Well, I like with the... I mean, because there was always confusion. Okay, can the movement, can I wheel this? And you'll see with charging now,
it becomes much easier. You either make it or you don't, and then you do the movement.
The rules for movement have, if anything, been streamlined just a little bit.
Right.
When you are not charging, you wheel the way you would in 7th edition, so you measure from the furthest point of the model, and that's fine. However, when you charge, all you need to do is you measure the closest point from your unit to the closest point from their unit. And if that's within your charge distance, don't worry about wheeling. Wheeling is free. You're in.
You're in. Yeah, that's cool. Because, and you know what? That's a lot like Arcane Legions, which is another really cool game that Harrison picked up from Unique Gifts and Games.
Yep.
And in that, it was just like move in, and if once you touch, they snap together. They call it. They actually call it the snap. Your two armies touch, and if they're at an angle, whatever the smallest angle is, so if you're at like one side's a 60 degree angle, one side's a 30, you snap to the 30.
Do you line them up the way you would with Warhammer?
Okay. You snap and you line up.
Okay.
But that's, like I said, okay, templates. Templates, anything under it, no partials. It's more partials.
If you're familiar with the Skaven book, it's exactly like the Skaven book, which is why I thought that the Skaven book was sort of a, it was already leaning toward 8th edition.
Well, and we were thinking, wow, that's kind of overpowering that the Skaven get to hit on everything. But that wasn't overpowering. That was, they were ready for 8th edition with that Skaven book.
So as long as we're talking about templates, if I could bring up a couple of things. Now, the template rules are fairly devastating. Anything you hit, so we're talking about even a small template can cover 16 guys or more. It's just how it is, because the little graze is a hit. So they've lowered the strength of a, lowered the strength of a stone thrower. The center is 9 instead of 8 now, so that's an increase. But the outer rings are now strength 3, and it does not ignore armor saves. Cannons, they've actually improved in a way. They're all D6 strength hits now.
Woo! Dwarves!
Flame templates, if you have a breath weapon. These are dragons and the like.
They can only use it once a game, not once a turn anymore.
Right. But everything again.
Unless, of course, you're a Hydra, because they each head gets a flame attack, don't they?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I thought they did.
No. The way it works is it's strength 5. However, for every wound you take, it's -1 strength. It's still a breath attack.
Oh, okay.
So, no, if anything, Dave, it's... You're
well,
more
we'll check
in, you're
your
more
in, for that, but
I would say if anything the Hydra attack is probably a little less useful than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing about breath weapons is that you can also opt instead of using the flame template, you can use it in close combat. This is actually significant because
couldn't you use it in close combat before?
No.
The breath weapons and stuff? I thought you could.
Nope.
Oh, well, I was wrong then.
Not to my knowledge. I mean, if you're right, I apologize, but from what I remember you could not breathe it in close combat. Because you'd be overlaying your own people.
Oh, too. That's right. You might hit your own guys.
So, but what you do instead is you roll 2d6, and okay. That's the number of hits. They do count towards combat resolution.
That's
so something
nice.
Like a dragon is a dragon could win a combat now the way a dragon couldn't necessarily win a combat before. You know, you'd lose if you win by one. If you lose by a couple because of ranks or something like that.
Right. Okay. Next thing you have on your list is true line of sight.
It seems more true than false.
Last week, last show, I complained and railed against it.
Better get used to it.
Well, but, okay. Now, when we looked in the book, they showed the picture as the example, and if you look at the picture in the book, you know, the giant is more than half behind a building, so he's got hard cover, so it's -2 to hit him with shooting. Soft cover is -1. Now, if you can see them through the forest, which you can because there's only 3 trees, you can see through a forest. There's not an if. The only way you couldn't see them through a forest is if it was a single model that was literally behind a tree when you were aiming and you couldn't see him at all. But for a unit, if you can see part of it, you can shoot at him. You can shoot through a forest. It's -1. It's an additional -1 to any other modifiers.
Can I go in a soapbox for a moment?
Go right ahead,
Dave. I think it's bad. I think it's bad game design. This is a case where I'm going to go ahead and point my finger and say I think I know better than Games Workshop. What they've done here is it's great for miniatures. It's bad for game design. It's not good for. It's easy to fluff this. This is great for garage. Bad for tournaments. I predict that tournaments will probably say, look. Go by the base size, and they'll come up with base sizes for certain models. And
But what does that have to do with seeing them?
Well, if you can trace a line of sight over terrain, then obviously you get the cover from it. They'll come up with rules for height and things like that.
I don't know. I don't see tournaments changing the rules that much. Here's the thing. They It's simplifying the rules. If you can shoot through it, we're just going to make it a penalty. Does that sort of nerf the usefulness of terrain? Absolutely. But that's why now GW has turned around and made other terrain rules to sort of
this is
make
be
up
an
for
ongoing
that.
Debate, I think, between
you and I are going to. Well, I.
You know, my opinion.
First
in case,
impressions. These are. Let's get
into terrain now.
Okay, let's qualify this with first impressions.
Okay.
I think I am being cautiously optimistic with this.
With the terrain rules.
Right.
Dave, do you want to explain these terrain rules, at least give it a brief overview?
Sure. Well, basically, you know, it used to be when you had especially because, you know, the High Elf Dragon is not on its base. There's a big mountain of rock that it's standing on, so it's way higher than it would normally be if it was just standing
on its
base.
It's a broad model with a huge wingspan, and it stretches way over its base size.
You know, the Wyvern is the same way for the Orcs and Goblins. Used to be if there was a piece of terrain between you and them, if you couldn't see the base, if you couldn't actually see the base of the model, then you couldn't shoot at it because you couldn't see it.
Right.
Now you can. My biggest fear was to say, well, if it's the line of sight, you can't hide behind a mountain or a hill anymore. Because a hill, now once again, if a hill's obscuring more than half of the model from the line of sight, it's going to get it's going to be hard cover. It's going to be -2 to your chance to hit it. Mm-hmm. Which, if you're shooting with arrows and you're at long distance anyway, you're looking at a 5 or a 6, and then it might even go beyond a 6 where you need 7s. And there is stuff in the rules. I don't think we should go into that right now.
That's fine.
But if you need more than a 6 on a 6-sided dice, there are rules for doing that.
It's the same as 7.
So it's going to be way harder to shoot them if they're behind a hill, but before it was no, you can't see them. Now,
well, if
you
we're
can.
Talking about a dragon behind a forest, the large target will cancel out the penalty to hit it.
Well, if they're behind, behind a forest makes it a -1.
Large target.
A large target cancels that out.
So it'd be,
but
it would
behind
be...
a hill, you can't see through a hill.
True.
So, and if they're more than half covered, which they generally would be, if your unit's on the ground and he's behind a hill, that would be hard cover, and it would be a -2 to hit.
I think we'd both agree that it makes sense to start including more physical terrain like buildings. You want something that physically blocks line of sight, because otherwise, larger targets like your dragons, your griffins, your wyverns are going to be pin cushions.
And of course, now I've already seen on different forums, you know, it's going to be 4. Minimum D6, or it's D6 plus 4 pieces of terrain on a table.
It's going to be a cluttered table, but you're not restricted the way you used to be.
5 to 10 pieces of terrain.
Yep.
You're going to see more hills. Now, I've already read, this is just Games Workshop's way to make me buy more terrain pieces and more buildings. Just build your own building, shut up.
Yeah, you start the game by cutting out a piece of green cardboard, put it on the table, and call it a forest. You know, just get the game going first.
I mean, the
first.
Buildings, you're going to need to actually build something, but, oh, what was it?
Well, you could always just put a couple of books stacked up and call it a building.
Joe from Wodcast, Joe Flesh, he had a whole thing where he was using Pringles cans to make towers.
Sure.
And you can design them and build it around it and use that as your thing, and then put some, you know, whatever paper, you know, build it over it. Dude, terrain is really simple to make.
Sure,
so.
If you do it that route, you can have some delicious potato chips while you're playing your game.
Yes, you can. And then you should get a bonus for your troops that are in there because they're well fed.
Do you get a cover bonus for being behind Pringles?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's the cover because that Pringles on the can has that mustache, and the mustache is everything.
Ah, I see. So it's like a salty save?
Yes, it's a salty save, yes. Oh, God.
All right. So,
well, that brings us into the special terrain rules, which I went and wrote
this,
down.
This is where we're going to debate. You, as you said, you're cautiously optimistic for the variety. There are, there's a chart. There's actually a 1 through 6 on each piece of terrain. So forest, there's 6 different types of forest, 6 different types of river, 6 different types of marsh, I think.
No.
Not for
I didn't get through everything.
Well, that's
I did
fine.
Not get through the obstacle. But for forest and rivers, there are 6 different types. But there's also other things. If you go to the GW website, which I encourage, and you look up the Temple of Skulls, I think that's a really cool piece of terrain. But once again, it was just another hill when you played with it.
Right.
It was a temple of to the Chaos Gods, a ruined temple to the Chaos Gods on top of a hill. which looked cool but served no purpose other than being a hill. Now, at the beginning of each player's turn, any character or champion who is on the Temple of Skulls can choose to embrace the favor of the Chaos Gods, and there's no restrictions as to what army you're playing. So it's not like the High Elves couldn't, considering that Anarion pulled the Sword of Cain. I think you could argue by the fluff. And by the way, folks, I'm a huge fan of the fluff. I don't necessarily play a lot of fluffy armies, but I like when a game follows the fluff. When playing by the fluff makes you a better player. The Fantasy Flight stuff, Fantasy Flight games, if you play by the fluff, it's better, it's easier to win than if you go against it. On this one, you can choose to embrace the favor of the Chaos Gods. Roll a d6 on a 2 to 6. One random characteristic goes up by d3, so you can get up to 1 to 3 extra attacks, strength, initiative. You don't know, the gods will favor you. If you roll a 1, the gods laugh and you are removed from the board and tortured and ad infinitum in the Chaos Realm. So do you want to risk that? On a 1 out of 6, your character is gone, but on another roll, he gets a bonus. It gives a purpose to the terrain.
Now here's my retort. This makes Warhammer just, it feels too much like Talisman. And I love Talisman, but Talisman, I expect to have a gin and tonic in my hand when I'm playing it. And I don't know if it has a place in a game that could be potentially a tournament game. In a garage game, it doesn't matter what you do. You can make up any rule, and that's fun. I don't know if I necessarily like these as much.
And my retort to your retort is there is never a battle where, as I said this last night, there's never been a war where randomness did not affect the battle. With the exception of at the end of World War II, when very large, powerful bombs were dropped and just ended the war in a one-sided fashion, randomness happens. Orders get messed up. People don't go through. You watch the History Channel, and one of the most interesting things I learned is we won some of the biggest battles of World War II against the Germans because Hitler gave orders not to be disturbed during his sleep, and that was that. And they needed Hitler's okay to do something. They couldn't get it because he was asleep. We won because the guy was sleeping. Yeah. That is a random factor, and I like it.
War, and I agree with you, but here's a... I'll retort to your retortedness. When I play a game, you could have something that's as random as Talisman, which some would argue is D6, I win. D6, I lose. Versus chess, which is no chance whatsoever. It's your skill versus your opponent's. When I play Warhammer, there is a dice involved, so therefore there has to be a random element. I would rather it steer more toward chess than Talisman. These rules, I think, take it dangerously close in that Talisman direction. It's subjective, it's my preference, and I'm not necessarily right, necessarily wrong, it's just what I feel.
Yeah, well, and like I said, once again, first impressions. We haven't played them yet.
I've never played this. It's all Theory Hammer.
A lot of this stuff is actually not hurting you so much as these are magical places. They are giving you bonuses based on the magic flowing through it. And if you go by, once again, the chaos, the gates that the great old ones built collapse, chaos floods into the world. All magic is chaos magic, basically. The elves learned how to channel it for good. But basically, all magic that comes through the chaos gates. It's all chaos.
With the exception of Tomb Kings, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, and with the exception of Tomb Kings. So
then again, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with them? But so that's neither here nor there.
It's these places are affected. Let's go to forests for an example.
Okay.
Let's see. Forests. To my knowledge, and I read it kind of quickly, and I don't have the book in front of me because it's at the store. But I think you can move as normal through a forest now. I don't think it halves your movement rate like it used to.
Depends on the unit we're talking about. So the infantry can walk or march through a forest, and it doesn't seem to have any
effect.
Now,
I don't know if you can march. You might only be able to walk. That's what I'm saying. I didn't check that. Oh. I'd have to double check to know.
Okay.
What I do know is that cavalry, monstrous cavalry, mm-hmm. and chariots, if they march, charge, overrun, flee, or pursue through a forest, they take a dangerous terrain test. Dangerous terrain test, for every model in that unit, you roll a dice. On a 1, that model takes a wound. So for most of your rank and file models, they die. For your characters, they take a wound.
Could be very serious. But yeah. It's also, if you're willing to take that gamble, it's a way to get troops where you want them quickly.
Right. So I don't know if you can march, move. But it says that, if cavalry says that if they march, they take a dangerous terrain test, then I'm assuming infantry can march through too.
It sounds
Once
like
again,
it.
Terrain has been completely changed. Before, it completely blocked sight and slowed you down. Now it's doing something different, which is why I'm kind of interested and cautiously optimistic. Once again, you read the fluff. The very first Gotrek and Felix story in the very first book. They were off in the forest and they meet up with these cultists and it's weird stuff. You know, the Warhammer world is a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Beastmen own most of the forests, and where they don't own it, there are weird and dangerous creatures living there. I always compare the forests of Warhammer world to sort of Mirkwood from The Lord of the Rings. It's a dangerous place.
Yes.
So to give these different things showing up in a forest, I think, does go with the fluff, and I think it makes it interesting. Let me read through the rule, and then I know you hate the rule, you're displeased with the rule.
I would like a little more. There's enough random element where I don't feel that random terrain fits what I want the army to the game to be. But
I think that random terrain fits once again with the fluff. But the way they have it, I think it's almost too much. And so let's go through it real quick.
Okay.
The steadfast rule is if you have more ranks than your enemy and they win the combat, you count as stubborn.
Correct.
If your unit is in a forest, it cannot be steadfast. If it's listed as stubborn, like the white lions are stubborn. So if you're stubborn, you're stubborn no matter what.
Right.
But if you're not stubborn, the steadfast rule will not help you in a forest.
Steadfast doesn't give you stubborn, it gives you the ability of stubborn. However, it can be canceled by being in a forest.
Right. Okay. Skirmishers that are mostly in a forest, if the unit is mostly in the forest, they are always stubborn. Skirmishers are just stubborn in the forest. That makes sense.
It also gets around the problem of what's the point of skirmishers.
Yeah, skirmishers can still be in the forest, can still be shooting. They can shoot from the forest without penalty now. Yes, they're more easily hit. My only question
is, means it's minus one to hit them now.
Yes, and my only other question, plus skirmishers get a bonus minus one to hit.
Skirmishers in general now, the rule is now, it's like the way it was before. Skirmishers was minus one to hit them, that transferred to 8th edition. However,
now, but if you're shooting into anything into a forest or through a forest, it's a minus one. So they get an additional.
So targeting a skirmisher is going to be a problem.
Yeah. Now here's where it gets weird. If you move the first time a unit moves into a forest, or if they're deployed in a forest, you have to roll to see if there's anything funky with the forest. On a 1, it's an ordinary forest. On a 2, it's an abyssal wood, and a unit that's mostly in the forest will cause fear. The unit in the forest, the trees itself, it's a scary forest.
No, that's only while you're in the forest?
If a unit is mostly in the forest, while it's in the forest, it causes fear.
While it's in the forest, it causes fear. Okay.
So if you charge me, and I'm mostly in the forest, but I'm partially out, like that first rank's out of the forest, but the rest of the back end is in the forest,
right,
we cause fear.
Okay.
Which is a nice thing. It's a bonus. It's not a penalty, but the woods are scary. It's kind of dark. You don't know what's there. It kind of makes sense. Number 3 is, I know the one you really dislike, is the Blood Forest. And that says any successfully cast spell cast by a model in the forest or at a model in the forest, then all units, wholly or partially in that forest. And that's all units. So if there's 3 different units touching the forest, this affects all of them. They will suffer D6 strength 4 hits, and after resolving the hits, the forest will actually get up and move 2d6 inches in a random direction, leaving behind the unit. The units don't move with it.
I think you're right. I don't like it. I think it's too much
weird.
Chaos in a game that's already chaotic enough.
That's too weird.
Okay. Then number 4 is the Fungus Forest. If you're at least partially in the Fungus Forest, you're stupid. You suffer from stupidity. Because the magic mushrooms are messing with your brain. Goblins, who like them, will suffer from stupid, but they also get to be stubborn in the forest.
Oh, okay.
So goblins get a bonus in the Fungus Forest on top of the penalty. If it's a 5, there's a venomous thicket.
Any model in the venomous thicket has poisonous attacks for close combat, but any model moving through it must take a dangerous terrain test for all the venomous creatures that may decide to attack you. And then for the final one is the Wildwood. Any unit, at least partially in it, at the end of the movement phase, on a 4+, will take D6 strength 4 hits. So if you're partially in it, there's a 50-50 chance you'll take some hits. It doesn't move away later.
I dislike all of those. I just assume play with a regular forest. Why do you need all that extra complication? Why would you want to make a game where it's my wit versus your wit?
Because now that you can go, now that the forests don't actually give you any real cover other than a modifier to shooting.
A modifier to shooting is enough.
Before you couldn't see. You couldn't see through the forest. You would literally block line of sight. Now that they don't block line of sight, they should do something. Otherwise, you're not going to. Why have forests?
Well, but the reason for a forest is it's not going to slow down your troops. I mean, they can walk between trees. It's not a problem.
Before it used to.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, I mean, shooting is more effective than it used to be. You know, why don't we? So we can agree to disagree a little bit about the forest. Why don't we get into what some of these other troops can do? We can bring it back to how terrain affects these different units. There's so many different rules. It's hard to cover it all.
Well, like I said, I'm not arguing against. I mean, I agree with you to a degree. I think that having a 1 out of 6 chance that your forest is normal, that's not with the fluff. I mean, not every time you walk into a forest, you're not taking your life into your hands. In the Warhammer world, and this is one of those things where
I know
better.
It's a fantasy setting.
I think that if you want to do a rule like this, then you say the first time you deploy or move into it, you roll a dice, and on, say, a 1 or a 2, then it's a special forest roll to see what it is. I don't think 5 out of 6 chances it should be weird.
Yeah.
I think maybe 1 out of 3 it has a chance to be weird, I think would be a little better, once again, if it's a first impression.
Really? I like those.
You do like them?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're interesting. I kind of like them. I think they're neat.
I think for fun, but at the same time, sometimes I want to be tested more based on my skill.
So let's stay out of the forest.
I want
to... stay out of the forest if you don't want to play. I'm running into them forests, man.
You're a wood elf.
But my dwarves. Now that my dwarves aren't going to get slowed down to 1.5 inches running through it, dude, I'll go.
Well, sure.
Well, look. Causes fear. Okay, 1's ordinary. 2, we cause fear. 5, we have poisonous attacks. So 3 of the... Actually, half of them give you a bonus. And the other half only possibly give you a penalty.
But again, it's all random, and it's nothing based on skill. It's, I think I need to be in this forest, but now I may potentially suffer something. It's just, it's odd. And again, I think I brought this up before recording, that... anytime you have two forces facing off against one another, generally speaking, you're not going to agree to fight in some random no man's land. One side is attacking, one side is defending, which means somebody at least knows the terrain. So somebody's going to be aware, oh, that's the Blood Forest, don't go in there, but I have to go in to find out.
Well, the Blood Forest moves, so when you show up, you don't know if that's the Blood Forest anymore.
If you want to play Talisman, play Talisman. Well, let's move on. Let's get away from terrain a little bit.
Okay.
I wanted to bring up the fact that, again, core units really make a big difference, but because blocks are so much more effective than they used to be, steadfast means that if you've got more ranks than your opponent, you're stubborn. Horde means that you can attack in extra ranks. Supporting attacks means that more ranks can fight than normal. So to retort for this, the common answer would be more shooting, right? Well, now shooting, you can shoot in 2 ranks, too.
Yep, you can shoot in 2 ranks.
And
you can actually shoot in more than 2 ranks if you're going to do your volley attack.
There's a special rule for bows, short bows, and long bows called volley fire. Now, all ranged weapons can fire in 2 ranks. The rumors were that only bows could. That's not true. So, Dave, you were grumbling that your gunfire?
Yeah, my
Thunderers.
Yeah, Thunderers, my Thunderers and my Quarrelers, because crossbows and guns were never... In the rumors, they weren't included in that.
They are included. You may fire in 2 ranks with them. I can fire with my crossbows, my repeater crossbows.
That's a lot of shooting. Even a 5-guy frontage went from 10 shots now to 20.
That's correct.
That's a lot.
I wonder. I do not know the answer to this. Will the errata limit my repeaters in the way that supporting attacks limits it to one attack?
That the second row can only shoot one shot?
Thematically, it doesn't make any sense, but it might be for the rules that they need to do something like that.
Ugh, but even then, I don't think they're going to do that because then...
I don't think so either.
Because then the second row doesn't get the minus one penalty for multiple shots, so now you're rolling different dice.
I agree with you. I don't think they're going to do it just because it overly complicates... something that is implied to be a natural ability of the Dark Guild. So why would we not...
But I really like the volley attack.
Okay, so that's... in every rank beyond the second, you cut in half that rank rounding up, and you may add that to your attacks. Now, you can't move, but it means that... So if you've got a block of 20...
But just like in every movie you see, they have their archer standing way back. They don't shoot straight... I mean, when they're getting closer, they're shooting straight forward, picking targets.
Right.
But, you know, like, or, you know, 300, you know, our arrows will blot out the sun. They're not shooting at you. They're shooting up in the air and just this big volley of arrows coming down on you from above. So why shouldn't the guys in the third and the fourth and the fifth rank get to shoot?
Yeah, historically, because that's how archers work.
Yeah,
they're not drawing a line of sight like a rifle. You are arcing your fire for maximum range.
Which I think is way cool.
Yeah.
For those big... And plus, then, if you want to do a block of, say, 20 or 30... archers, you know, if you got tough
yep.
archers, you
yep.
can sit there and shoot with lots of them, and then when they get into close combat, you've got ranks and you've got...
So for the first time, you are encouraged to take not just that thin line, that thin elite 5 or 10 guys strong unit of archers.
Yeah.
Now you're going to start seeing full blocks that can take advantage of...
Well, and for my wood elves, for the Glade Guard, I would always have one row of 10 so they could all shoot. Now I could have 2 rows of 5, which is going to allow them... That ability, if I did take a small unit like that, mm-hmm. will allow them the ability to still all shoot and have a smaller frontage, so I'm not covering up the entire front of my deployment zone.
That was always a problem with your wood elves, if I remember, that you run out of room.
I would have to put them near the front and then put, like, skirmishers around in between them so that the skirmishers can, like, squeeze between them.
Well, your dryads, they take up a lot of room. And less maneuverable than they used to be because beforehand you would...
Just put them in a cloud.
Yeah. Now you... Okay, so let's quickly touch on that. Skirmishers, it is confirmed. The rule that states that you have to put them a half an inch apart is confirmed. From now on, skirmishers all have to face the same way. They do have a flank. They do have a rear. They no longer have 360-degree line of sight, so effectively that... Just imagine taking a regular block of troops and expanding it, putting more space between them, just opening it up a little bit, and that's effectively what you've got. You've got a regular rank, a regular block with
freedom. They get free reforms.
True. So when you move, the rule is you can reform as much as you want, you just have to make sure that no unit moves more than its charge range.
Well, and I like that, though, because you can still use them as a screen. Before, you could take a unit of skirmishers, and if you wanted to, you could run them an inch apart. 10 guys, or 12 of them, could go in one row, an inch apart. You take up at an inch apart plus the width of the models. 10 guys are about a foot wide, and
yep.
you cannot shoot through them.
Yep.
You cannot see through them to shoot the guys behind them. You can still do that now. Because you can still do them a half inch apart in one long row and then reform them into a block if you want to move them later. I don't know if you can... I don't know with the line of sight rules if you... That's the one thing we didn't look up. Before, you could not see through the gaps in a skirmisher unit.
Do skirmishers block line of... I don't know. I don't... You know, I didn't have... I didn't have the...
Because if
the
they do, you can still use them as a screen.
It's possible. I would argue that it makes sense, but who knows?
Yeah.
With true line of sight, it makes it more difficult. This is something I didn't mention before, Dave, and it's actually quite critical, and I think you're going to see this. This is a throwback to older edition of the rules. When you charge, if your declared target decides to turn tail and flee, you can redirect your charge in a different direction.
Which is cool, as long as you can read, because you could get to measure.
Right.
So
if you've got more than one viable target and your first target decides to run away, you normally would just have to pursue them. Well, now you can redirect in a completely different direction as long as you can see that second target and not waste your charge.
And I was reading that, and that's, I think, the thing that was most confusing to me, the thing that's going to take the most time to get used to, is now when you declare your charges, I declare a charge with this guy. Okay. It used to be you declare all your charges, and then they kind of declare their reactions. Now you declare your reaction when they declare the charge. So if I declare a charge on these guys, and they decide to stand and shoot, you know, they have to declare their reaction. Okay, I stand and shoot against them. Mm-hmm. Okay, now these guys are going to charge. You can't stand and shoot against those other guys because you've already stand and shoot
but
against
the
person.
But you can change your reaction if you've been charged. If I'm the defender and you're charging mm-hmm. me, you mm-hmm. declare your charge and I say, fine, I'll shoot. Then you declare a charge with a second unit at that same target. Mm-hmm. I can change my reaction at that point.
You can decide to flee. You can't decide to, oh, I'm going to stand and shoot them instead.
You're correct. I can't shoot at both, but I can change my reaction if I realize right. I'm getting charged by both. I can change it at that point.
Yeah, but like I said, it's still the only real change is to decide pretty much to flee because.
I've got the charge summary here. It's
right.
You declare a charge mm-hmm. With a unit, then you resolve that charge reaction so I can say I'll hold, I'll flee, I'll stand and shoot. And then you go back to step watch one, which is declare another charge.
Right.
And until you...
But since you have to resolve the reaction, the standing and shooting would be... You'd have to resolve that stand and shoot. You'd have to roll for it. Roll for the stand and shoot, which is why you cannot then decide, oh no, I want to stand and shoot against them. It keeps you from changing your mind and deciding to stand and shoot at someone else.
Well, you're right. You're right.
Right. I mean, then you can decide to flee, which is nice because you can kind of stand and shoot at those guys and then say, uh-uh, I'm running away.
Well, you declare it before you do it.
Right.
And you would resolve those shooting attacks at the time of moving the charges. Okay, before I move these guys, here you go. So it's declare a charge, resolve charge reaction, declare a charge, resolve charge reaction, blah, 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 until you've done all your declarations, then move all charging units in any order you like.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like I said, I'm just focusing on that stand and shoot because that's the reaction with my dwarves I have a lot.
Yes.
Is you resolve that reaction. So when you say I charge and you're in range,
oh, I see what
say
you're
I stand and
there
shoot,
is, there
so
is
then
some,
I roll. I actually shoot you before you move those charges.
There is some play to it. By doing it in a particular order, it sort of forces my hand. Either I declare that I'm standing and shooting against this unit thinking another one's going to charge.
Yeah, or you declare you're going to hold thinking that unit's going to charge and I'd rather stand and shoot against them.
So that allows for... Okay, so by doing it this way, it allows for a little more tactic. I like that. I like
yeah,
that a lot.
If you're attacking with three... You know, the example was he attacks with this guy, he charges, and they decide to hold because they want to save their stand and shoot for the other guy who's going to charge. That guy charges, they decide to stand and shoot, they shoot. Then, because they did the shooting, then he comes in with his hammer and says, wham, I'm hitting you with these guys, and you can't stand and shoot with them anymore because they've already done it. So that's kind of it's a little confusing the way the steps go. That's something we have to play a couple times
well,
to see how it goes.
Well, that's where the theory turns into practice. We're going to play a couple of games and recognize, okay, there's some tactical flexibility in the charging phase where if you've got more than one unit, I can force your hand to either, are you going to shoot these guys or are you going to shoot these
yeah,
guys?
Yeah, I really like that.
And the interesting thing is you can bluff. If I've got two units that you think are going to charge you, I'll charge you with the guys that maybe are weaker and you're like, I will not shoot those guys.
I'm going to hold.
And then I decide not to charge with the other one.
Yeah.
And screw you.
Exactly. And then it's like, there you're gone.
All right, well...
Let's. I think because of the time, the length, and we're only on, like, page two, I don't think we need to cover all of this in one show, but let's talk about the stuff that we really...
Well, here's something interesting,
impressed
Dave.
With.
I wanted to mention that as initiative determines who goes first, if you have a tied initiative, attacks are resolved simultaneously.
Now, how does that work?
That means that I'm going to be rolling, you're going to be rolling, we're going to be counting up the number of casualties, and if we kill each other, we kill each other.
So we roll at the same time, or do
in fact,
you...
we resolve it at the same time. So if we're
so basically
the average initiative is 3. Beastmen can charge into an empire. They both have initiative 3. Those attacks will be happening simultaneously.
Oh, so basically, if we both have a unit of say just 10 guys,
mm-hmm.
if it's simultaneous, if you attack and say actually killed 8 of the guys,
we can literally wipe each other out.
I would still get my 10 attacks because
correct.
Your 8 guys aren't considered gone because we're doing it at the same time. Oh, that's cool.
I like that. There's no reason that I cannot... I
don't know what you're nodding at, Harrison. That completely nerfs your sword masters and your white lions.
Well, let's get into that. So let's talk about Always Strikes First, since Harrison has an Always Strikes First army. Always Strikes First is about the same as it used to be.
You're
always striking first. But things are a little different now. If you have always strikes first, this is a confirmed rumor from Warseer. If you always strike first and your initiative is higher, you are allowed to reroll your missed attacks.
Oh yeah, it's not even from Warseer. That's in the book.
That's in the book.
So if you have always strikes first and which the elves have the initiative of 5,
the base initiative
so
is 5.
So they would get not only to strike first, But any misses, they would get to reroll.
Effectively hatred, except hatred that works every round.
Every round. So, but his two best special units for the High Elves, his Swordmasters and his White Lions.
Swordmasters and White Lions,
they have great weapons.
Great weapons. Yes. And
which
the
is
rule,
always strike last. And we used to just ignore it.
So the rule now is if you have always strikes last and you have always strikes first, they cancel each other out. You're considered to have neither of them, and then you would go by your basic initiative.
Which, for most of the time, an initiative of 5, he's still going to strike first. He doesn't get the extra rerolls on the attacks.
Correct.
But where it messes with him is like now High Elves versus Dark Elves, when they're both initiative 5.
We're going to be attacking simultaneously.
It's simultaneous, and it's going to be a little bit of... I just think it's...
Well, let's get into that, because effectively his High Elves have now taken on some of the properties of the Dark Elves, because in most battles, they will have hatred. Effectively hatred. My Dark Elves, with their initiative 5, suddenly have effectively the speed of a Surian. Always strike first.
Well, hatred isn't just rerolling. Don't they have something else that... Don't they... If you have hatred, you don't have to charge. That's frenzy. But is there anything else with hatred you have to do?
Well, with hatred...
Oh, you can't... You cannot choose to flee.
You have to...
Or is that it?
You can choose to flee, but you can't choose not to pursue.
Okay. So he doesn't have that to it.
Now are the same.
Well, they're almost
well, they're
the
not
same.
The same, but they're very...
They're very
they're
similar.
More
You're
similar
right.
than they were.
He's got a point, though, because now for the first time, my Dark Elves are going to be playing more cagey like High Elves.
Mm-hmm.
His High Elves can play slightly more aggressive like Dark Elves.
Yeah.
And are you more aggressive now?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, when I played in that one tournament... I mean, I was playing my dwarves against this High Elf army, and he basically just had his basic 2 core units, 2 sets of archers, and almost everything else in the army was units of 14 swordmasters with their 2 attacks. He would come in, always strike first, wipe me out. I got no attacks back. This way, you know, it's taken that away from him. It's made him a little less powerful. I think for people playing against the High Elves, it gives you more of a chance, and it takes away that whole "I'm just going to take loads and loads of swordmasters."
Let me explain that. I agree with you completely, Dave. What Dave you're saying is that in 7th edition you could take a line of 14, a line of seven,
yeah,
swordmasters
7.
With the always strikes first.
And get with 15 attacks with a champion.
You charge in, you have an overwhelming number of attacks, you wipe out their front rank, which means they can't attack back.
Except for the one champion.
Right, you might lose one or two attacks
back.
Or you could even declare a challenge and the rest of your unit will attack. Well, whatever.
Right.
It was momentum. You use your momentum, you crash into the opponent, you wipe out their front rank, there's no attacks back, you take no casualties. By being aggressive...
Then you win the combat, they run, you run them down. I mean, it was frightening.
But 8th edition does not work like that at all.
No.
And this is the reason why my Dark Elves must now play more like High Elves. When you have that line of 14 or 15 elite troops, I can crash in, I can get my first attack, but if I'm attacking a big unit, I don't wipe out the front rank. The rules specifically state that casualties are taken from the back.
Well, they always were taken from the back, but now that they're taken... Now it's basically saying that as long as you have 2 ranks in front, whatever's left, if they have those front 2 ranks, they all get to attack.
Correct.
Back.
I mean, but what they mean by that, though, is yeah, that's exactly right. If you've got guys touching you, they're attacking.
Right.
So
makes sense.
My protection is no longer there. If I go in and charge and wipe out the front rank, so to speak, you're still going to attack back. My elite core small units are defenseless, and they will not last long. So
well, and you know.
It messes up both the High Elves and the Dark Elves. It means that we can't take those tiny units anymore and expect to succeed, unless we take...
If you're going to talk, come over
in
here
a way,
so the mic can pick
in
it up.
A way, High Elves and Dark Elves, if they want to play that way, they have to go the Ogre route, multiple small units. But I don't think it's... I'm not sure. It's all Theory Hammer. I'm not sure that's the way to go.
Yeah, first impressions, I don't see that. I just don't see that working.
Like I said, I'm gonna go with Horde Spearmen. I'm going to go with Corsairs. Well, I'm going to go with Witch Elves. I think... Multiple hand weapons right now, to me, seems like in the initial stages of the game. My metagame is multiple hand weapons.
Well, with the last little tournament that we played with the three of us, I took Orcs and Goblins, which I hadn't played before. And I'm telling you, I mean, we talked last night. My dwarves, I mean, they're my first love. They were my first army. I can't wait to play them with the new rules. I've been saying for months that once these new rules come out, I'm playing with my ogres because I really like the ogres. They're basically, you know, kind of like dwarves on crack. I love them. I'm waiting to see them played.
Don't do crack, kids.
Don't do drugs, kids. Stay in school.
Would somebody please think about the children?
Somebody must think about the children.
There's something wrong with you two.
Well, but I really loved playing those orcs and goblins. I mean, animosity aside, all the weirdness that goes on in a orc and goblin army makes it fun, and I am just looking forward. I will say, bring on your two ranks of seven.
No,
14 spearmen against my horde of 50 little night goblins. Their chances of hitting, they're going to be hitting on fours or fives.
Now, in 8th edition, you better believe I will be not taking ranks of 14 elves.
Yeah, 14 elves and two ranks of seven. Bring it on. I'll take a mass horde against them, and I'll actually have a chance for the first time.
Heck no, Dave Wojtek.
I invite you to bring...
Why don't you tell them about the Insano Goblins?
Well, the Insano Goblins are for another story, but they turned up in both of my Orc and Goblin games.
Well, yeah. If you're going to be playing Orcs and Goblins, I would hope you bring Fanatics.
Not the Fanatics. That was when... remember how...
you're talking about your animosity roll?
Yeah, my animosity rolls. Every time I rolled animosity for these goblins, they kept wogging forward. And then the dragon lands and everybody runs except the little goblins. And then, you know, they ran. They constantly rallied. I mean, they were wogging against... I mean, they were rolling one or six for the animosity and they were, rushing forward at the dragon. They were insane. They just attacked everything. It was fun. But so what else we got? Stomp and Thunder Stomp. A lot of this stuff's online. You can find this on Warseer.
True, but they're listening
to us. You can find
it
in the books. Well, yes, I'm just saying.
Well, okay, so...
This is going to be a five-hour show if we go through everything we learned.
Well, let's quickly talk about the different unit types. Because what they've done is they've effectively added some adjectives on... They've redefined the different models. So, yes, you still have your infantry, which is 20 or 25-millimeter humanoids, right?
You still have cavalry.
Still have cavalry, which is effectively two models merged into one with effectively one stat line. You use certain ones, use the movement of the mount, use the leadership and attacks of the guy riding it.
Right.
One wound and the whole thing is taken off. Ogre-sized models, that is to say that...
40-millimeter bases, basically.
40-millimeter humanoids are now on monstrous infantry, and they have certain rules. They have monstrous support, which means...
Second rank can have up to three attacks.
Up to three attacks.
As opposed to just one.
So just as an example of that, Minotaurs can frenzy and gain additional attacks, but that second rank won't benefit from that. They'll still be stuck with their three. Crimea River, they're going to be outstanding anyway.
Well, plus, three models constitutes a rank, which means you're going to actually have some ranks with monstrous infantry, whereas before...
You have options now, yeah. Yeah, those small units... You don't have to go that route. You can actually take, six seems to be the magic number right now, the stereotypical number for a rank of ogres.
Well, you might even need a few more, though, because...
If you don't want to lose that rank.
Yeah, because you can't take out flanks without two ranks, and if you lose one, if you only have two ranks, you lose one model, and they can't...
But if you take more than that, you're starting to see a significant expenditure. But we'll see what people take. So you think eight?
I don't know. Seven might be the way, or six with a character might even help. So that way, you know, you've got those three wounds on the back guy. If he can make it there, you can still be hitting the flanks. But just the fact that you can have three for a rank, I think, is great. I like the monstrous infantry. Then there's monstrous cavalry. Monstrous cavalry is basically...
razor gore? Can you mount those? Oh, you can't mount those.
You can't just ride a razor gore. That's on a... They pull a chariot.
Monstrous cavalry.
Well, it's
your eagles.
Eagles.
Okay.
Because they're it's a monstrous size. So that's if you can ride it, it's a monstrous cavalry.
Eagles?
Yeah.
Wood elf.
Oh, my wood elf. The lord on the great stag. The great stag's on a 50-millimeter base. That's a monstrous cavalry.
Okay.
You basically, whoever has more wounds, you use their wound characteristic. So, you know, the stag will have four wounds, and so that's how many wounds the model has.
I think that the Bretonians had that with like a Lord Pegasus. I don't remember exactly what it's called. Yeah.
Half of the demons, the Warriors of Chaos, if you're riding on a Juggernaut.
Oh, Blood Crushers.
Blood Crushers, okay. Chaos, Corn Lord on a Juggernaut of Korn. Any Chaos Lords on the demonic mounts? Those are the big 50-millimeter bases. Right. They count. They say now some of them just count. It actually says in the book they're just count as regular cavalry, even though they're on larger bases. That's different. But basically, stuff that has its own set of stats and has multiple wounds doesn't just count. You know, like then that would be monstrous cavalry. And then there's the monstrous. Well, you basically it's just slightly different than regular cavalry. Instead of having the one wound between the two models. Basically, if it's bigger than a normal cavalry, the 25 by 50 millimeter base,
mm-hmm.
it's a monstrous cavalry, and it follows the rules of cavalry that the rider and the mount cannot be separated. If you kill a corn lord on a juggernaut, the juggernaut dies, then they're both dead. Once all the wounds are gone, the whole model's gone.
You treat it very much like cavalry.
Right.
If the rider dies, take the model off.
Right. Then the only difference for that is ridden monsters. They don't follow. Basically, like your dragon and your wyvern are ridden monsters, whereas you can kill the rider and the mount will stay, or you can kill the mount and the rider will stay.
But some very positive and significant rules changes for those guys.
Chariot follows a ridden monster rule, too, by the way.
Yes.
If you destroy the chariot, you don't necessarily destroy the rider.
Right, if there's a character.
And if you can kill the character on the chariot's not necessarily destroyed. It's still got its driver.
Rider, yeah.
But it does give you the +1 to your armor save, which it didn't do before.
You're talking not the chariot. Chariot gets +2. You're talking about the ridden monster.
Ridden monster.
Right.
Yes.
Special. But again, I wonder, do chariots still give +2 armor?
Well, I have no idea.
What?
I didn't get to look them. I didn't look up chariots that much.
Would a screaming ball or a plague furnace count as a ridden monster?
I think it probably
yes,
would.
Yes, because you can I think because if you shoot at that, I think you have to randomize between the machine and the seer on it.
We're going to find that out, though, in the errata, because they have to... I mean, that's such a specialty unit.
They'll have to declare whether if it's a... Yeah, if it counts as a ridden monster, they'll classify it.
But large monsters like that, they get a special version of that stomp attack called Thunder Stomp, which is D6. It always strikes last, so as long as it's still alive, that's when the attacks happen.
But D6 wounds instead of just one wound.
D6 automatic hits.
D6 hits.
The best part about those large targets now, those ridden monsters. So even the cheaper monsters like the griffin, the hippogriff, the wyvern, anything like that, they have a better place now because they do add to the armor save of the rider.
Yep.
Not only that,
yep.
But if it's the general or battle standard bearer, normally you have a 12-inch range. Like the general has a 12-inch range of affecting its other units with its leadership. Now it is an 18-inch range because
you're
on
a
large
target. Because they can see you from anywhere. Your troops it'd be more easy to use your leadership because they can see you.
Or if your general, him or herself, is a large target, or itself.
Yeah.
Like a greater demon.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah, a greater demon is a large target. The other thing, which, now that we were talking about cannonballs.
Yeah.
If a template covers... If a template hits the base of a ridden monster... If the base is hit, then both the rider and the mount are hit.
Makes sense.
With the template.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a stone thrower and the center gets the bonus, you randomize it.
Randomize who gets the center,
the more strength.
Right.
Cannonballs. A bouncing cannonball. If a cannonball hits and bounces through your dragon, you've got to roll to see if it hits the dragon or the cannonball hits the rider.
That's like before.
Did you do that before?
It was you choose the target in the case of a cannonball because it's a point you're getting
right.
Hit with a ball and not both will be hit but one or the other will be hit.
Yeah, the only rule that I want to know is if my cannonball hits the ground at because basically anywhere it goes it's got that whole line
yep.
The extra distance
right.
So it hits the ground at this point and then it goes let's say it bounces 10 inches.
Mm-hmm.
If it bounces say it hits a unit. Of 25 guys. It hits right in the middle of the unit and then bounces 10 inches.
Yep.
After it plows through that part of the unit, if there's a unit behind it, does it hit that unit too?
It does. However, here's the biggest change. A cannonball, it starts at strength 10, so it's almost moot. But
for every rank, it goes down a strength like a bolt thrower.
Like a bolt thrower. So, I mean, if you go through an entire rank, by the time you get to that second rank, arguably it could be strength 6 or 5 or 4.
So having your dragon a bit behind, or having a couple of units in front of your dragon, if that cannonball hits the unit and goes through three ranks, now it's only a strength 7 hit against a toughness 6 dragon.
So golly, it only hits the dragon on a 3.
But well, before, if the dragon was behind a hill, you couldn't shoot at it.
Now
there's no protection for these large targets.
I agree with your example, but bear in mind that someone wielding a cannon gets to place where it initially lands. So mm-hmm. you could, if you want to hit that dragon, just aim over the unit.
Well, but what I'm saying is, if I keep my unit, if I'm deploying and I put the unit an inch in front of my dragon, the back of the unit's an inch in front of my dragon.
Right, which is the minimum distance they
can
make.
And you're going to pull it back 5 inches because you're rolling to see how that first dice adds that distance. You're not going to put it right on the dragon and pray you get either a 2 or a direct hit.
You would actually have to put it into the unit knowing that the strength is going to be vastly reduced.
Right.
Using your unit as a meat shield.
Yeah.
That's a good tactic, Dave. That's a very good tactic.
You heard it here first, folks.
When I can actually afford to take a dragon anymore. Let me quickly point out, because I was doing...
This is great.
I was doing some math a couple of nights ago last night.
It's math hammer.
Well, all right. So... when you were building your characters, in the old days, of course, you had a limited number of lords you could take. In a 2,000-plus point game, you could take one lord, and you could take up to 4 heroes, 4 characters. So now it's just you have 25%. 25% up to 25% of your army can be a lord, up to 25% of your army can be hero or heroes, but there's no limit. So for the Dark Elves, if I decided that I really wanted to take a dragon... it would cost me somewhere in the neighborhood of... Well, now, in tournaments, most common tournaments these days, it sounds like, are 2250 in 7th edition. So that's the number I was playing with. That seems a little random for a lot of garage players, where we just go 2,000 or 2,500.
Right.
But for 2250, which is the standard tournament game, a High Elf Prince and a Star Dragon, on a Star Dragon, naked, is 520 points. A level 4 Archmage, which I think was the sturdier tournament option, and then the most he can do is a Moon Dragon, that's 560 points. Again, naked.
Well, still, you know what? I'm going to say this. You're talking the Star Dragon, because if you're going to take a penalty on comp for having a dragon...
You might as well have a Star
Dragon. But if my choice is between a Sun Dragon or no dragon...
That's it. That's.
But, I mean, but even the crappiest dragon is a
it's a dragon.
Yeah, a crap.
It's a dragon.
Like a wyvern. A wyvern is only as tough, I think, as the weakest dragon. It's a flippin' wyvern. It's tough.
Well, that's
a dragon.
I agree with you. And this is a very positive aspect of these rules changes, because it encourages people to take fewer, okay, I'm just going to go for the dragon. Well, in the case of the High Elf, you're finally going to start seeing sun dragons. Because that's...
Yeah, I do. I've always wanted to take a Sun Dragon just to see what it was like.
Well, strength 2, like, breath weapon.
You've been afraid to take them ever since the first time you took a dragon, and I had my engineer attached to my cannon, which gave it a D6.
I was not afraid to take it.
I hit you, and I rolled a 6, and you had 1 wound left on that dragon.
That's right,
the
Star Dragon is 7 wounds.
Yeah, 7
and
wounds. From there on in, you never took anything but a Star Dragon, because you said, no way am I going to have a dragon that can get wiped out in one hit. Which, I was a lucky shot on my part anyway, but it really scared you with that dragon. Here's something you brought up.
Which one?
Dragons in the current rules count as a hero choice. Like, if you take a lord on a dragon, it counts as a lord choice.
For both the Dark Elf and the High Elf, if you take a dragon...
I think for everybody who can have a dragon, it counts as a hero choice.
Probably.
My dragon... even the forest dragons count as, I think, as a hero choice.
As a hero choice. So we don't know yet.
...that can have a hero on a dragon.
Yes. That's correct.
But my point being, and this was the question we asked... If the dragon counts as a hero choice, then do the points for the dragon count under your 25% hero choices?
At the very least, I think that would be fair.
That would make sense. So you get less heroes if you took a lord on a dragon.
All the more reason why taking a dragon in a smaller point game is a really edgy thing to do.
Right, but it makes it now easy to take a completely tricked out lord on a dragon if the dragon points count under your hero percentage. And your lord points count under your lord percentage.
But by doing so,
you're still burning points either way.
You've already got your 25% maxed out practically by taking that dragon, and your heroes are going to be limited to like maybe one spellcaster.
Yeah.
You're not going to have much in the way of magic offense or defense.
Yeah, that's true.
And in this version of the game, it should be pointed out that the spellcasting, I don't want to go over the whole thing, but spellcasting, the number of your wizards It makes a difference.
Yeah, we need to look, and we need to look at, we need to spend a, you know, that's, I think that's for a whole nother show. We can do a whole nother episode just looking at how magic works now. There's a
Pretty good idea of how it works, and we don't have time to cover it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We can spend a whole show just covering the magic.
And now, you know me. Now, Dave, of course, you're not a big fan of magic. You play dwarves, you play ogres, and magic is sort of ancillary to your strategy. For me, I love magic. I love...
do too.
Oh, you do too.
I'm a defensive magic player. I take magic just enough... I take just enough magic to stop yours. I
look at it this way. Why, you know, you're a dwarf player. Why on earth would you ignore your shooting phase? You have a significant shooting phase, one of the best. Well, why would I ignore a magic phase? I can do damage. And now in the new version of the game, they have fleshed out the different types of spells. You have magic missiles and direct damage spells, the same as you did it before, but you also have ones called augment, which are buffs, if I can use that term. Things that positively affect your units.
Uh-huh.
Benefits, not necessarily like... Well, you know, you could add weapon skill, you could add ballistic skill.
Well, yeah, and now I even have to wonder how I use my dwarves, because before I didn't spend a lot of points on runesmiths I took magic resistance. But now magic resistance is not effective against a lot of different types of magic.
Magic resistance is now a ward save specific against magic. It's not dice you roll, it is merely a ward save against the damage.
So,
and that doesn't apply to a hex.
Right, or a buff.
Because
a buff is affecting your units, not mine.
Well, before, but I mean, that would be the same it was before.
Well, right.
You're right.
The hex, I mean, that's still affecting my unit, and I don't get to use my magic resistance against it.
Correct.
And so that, now I have to re...
But you have something better instead. You no longer add +2 to your dispel dice, you add +2 to all of your rolls to dispel.
Yay!
So
we don't know that I don't get 2 extra dispel dice.
I know that you don't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the rules are that you get +2 to dispel.
Right.
Just every roll.
I mean, did you look up, though, did it actually say that...
Dwarves, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I know it said they get +2 to dispel, I saw that. But when it lists how, you know, like when it says, okay, you start off with 2... power dice, and you start off with 2 dispel dice.
I did not see that unless there's something in the errata. It sounds like they address that.
That's what I'm looking
for. The dwarves. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Do I still get 4 dispel dice and no power dice? I would think it would only be fair since I don't get any power. Well, I get 2 power dice, but I don't get to use them unless I'm trying to get rid of a remains in play spell. My 2 power dice is pointless.
But I don't know. I think we haven't tried it. The way I see it, I think it's actually quite powerful. Every single roll you get +2.
If I don't have any dice, it doesn't matter.
You're going to get... So when you roll power dice in the magic phase, you roll 2d6, and obviously...
Oh, that's right. I'm going to get extra dispel dice, too, because we roll for the...
Well, I don't think you get extra. It's not like 7th edition where you get a base amount plus whatever...
But what I'm saying is you roll for those to see how many power dice you get, and then that's going to add to the... Also, the highest die is going to add to the dispel pool for the opponent, isn't it?
That is your dispel pool.
Yeah.
And then you would also do what's called channeling. Wizards on both sides would roll dice. However many wizards you have, you roll that many dice. Any sixes that come up, add that to your pool. In the case of your dwarves, I am predicting that your... I don't even know.
Runesmiths.
They probably count as wizards for channeling.
Okay. Well, we'll see. That's what I want to. Like I said, I'm wondering how that's gonna work out myself.
Well, the spells themselves. My last episode, I predicted that the spells were going to be more expensive. Now that I've seen the complete list of the 8 colleges of magic, they actually vary from relatively cheap, that level 5 casting, all the way up to close to 25.
I mean, yeah, and nothing used to go over like 15,
the
right?
The dreaded 13th spell.
The dreaded 13th spell is doable now. What you're allowed to do as a wizard is, and you don't, does not matter what level you are, you roll anywhere between 1 to 6 power dice. Add your casting level, and that's what you roll.
So your level 4 Greyseer is going to start off with a base of 4.
Correct, which means that those level 5 spells almost seem automatic. This is where the trick comes in. If you roll a natural 1 or 2, so that means if you roll 1 or 2 dice, you either roll 1 or 2 on that one die, or you roll snake eyes on 2 dice. If you roll a natural 1 or 2, you fail.
Yeah.
Not a miscast, but a failure. And if you fail, and this is in quotes, broken concentration is the rule, that means that particular wizard is no longer allowed to cast spells this phase.
So if you are a level 4 wizard and you want to cast a magic spell that's cost 5 to cast, You can choose just to roll the one dice, but there's a one-third chance that it's going to fail in your magic.
It's actually a gamble. It's like, I'd almost rather commit the dice.
Right.
So those cheap, easy spells...
You're still going to be throwing two dice
at it. You might consider. Yeah, there's incentive to whip some dice at it.
Now...
And the rumor of... the rumor of a unstoppable force equals miscast is true.
Which I like.
I don't get it.
Once again, I like... Okay, think about this. You're rolling, and you roll the sixes. You're using the best magic possible, okay? But, once again, magic is chaos. Magic comes from chaos. It's chaotic. So, you're channeling all the... They can't stop it. You're channeling so much magic at them, it's going to hit them no matter what they try to do. But, it's not easy to control that.
Yep.
So, basically, it's not so much that you miscast as the magic becomes unstable and uncontrollable, so you have to roll on your... miscast table.
Do you have anything about four of the miscast table?
I've got the entire miscast. Chris has the entire miscast. I don't want to go over the whole thing.
But basically, it's like it goes anywhere from just you to you and the entire unit you're with taking strength 10 hits.
In a nutshell, if you miscast, expect this to happen. You're going to be likely to be centering a template over your wizard. Everything under that template is taking a strength 10 hit. You're likely to be losing lots of power dice. You don't want to roll unstoppable force. Rolling boxcars is a bad thing now.
Yeah.
You still get your spell, but then your guy's going to blow up and part of your unit's going to blow up. So, keeping a wizard with a unit is a gamble.
And once again, if you roll your 2d6.
How would that affect Teclis?
We don't know. Teclis is a specialty character.
The question is, how does that affect Teclis?
Which is all Harrison cares about. That is his favorite character out of any army, anything. Teclis the Wizard, who I think is really cool. I like Teclis. I like the story behind him.
But he's a milksop high elf. So, you know, I would think...
Blah, blah, blah.
If I could speculate, I would think the fact that he's unstoppable forcing all the time implies that in 8th edition, he's going to give it 5 minutes into the game and blow up.
Well, no, I would...
And that would be great.
Well, what I would forget about his stupid crown.
Well, no,
the crown of stupidity.
They would probably do, and this is my guess of what they're going to do with Teclis, is... They can't say he never miscasts, because that would make him ridiculously powerful.
But he is ridiculously powerful.
Well, he is ridiculously powerful. What I'm saying is, Teclis, any doubles count as unstoppable force.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think you'll see with Teclis is any doubles with the exception are unstoppable force with no penalty, except for the double sixes.
Well,
double fives, fours, threes, and twos.
That's a good rule. The rules do imply it's possible to have one without the other, meaning an unstoppable force without the miscast or vice versa.
Right.
For example, the Black Tongue.
Yeah.
So it's possible. It does exist. Teclis might just be a cheese ball. I mean, there's a reason why in 7th edition tournaments that allow special characters, it's going to be, high elf army with Teclis, high elf army with Teclis, high elf army
with
Teclis.
That's why I don't like... That's why, and we can talk about this on a later episode,
That's neither here
nor
there.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this debate, and you and I both agree. Specialty characters are, by their very nature, because they're like superheroes. It's like, my army has Superman. Really? Well,
yeah.
I can't beat Superman. They're unbalanced. I mean, Thorgrim Grudgebearer, for the 780 points he cost, or whatever it is, or 720 points, he's got about 1,000 points worth of power. Archon the Everchosen, we said, is 685. Dude, that guy's got about 1,000 points worth of power. Teclis costs, what? How much does Teclis cost?
Like
500?
Yeah.
But he's got about 700 points worth of power. They're not balanced characters.
Which is why I don't like them.
Yeah.
I love them. It's just fun to
take them. Dave, which army do you think you're looking forward to most with the 8th edition rules?
Okay. No. Okay. First of all, I'm not a ventriloquist. So I didn't say that, and you shut up. You're not Dave. There's a shush. I'm most excited for the ogres, only because the ogres were on the bottom tier for so long. They were an army that just you don't see them in tournaments because it's almost. I mean, it's just you got to be really good and lucky.
Or if you do, you see a sheepish grin on the player's face, knowing what's coming
to win. Yeah, I mean, you got to be good and lucky to win with ogres.
Yeah, the odds are stacked against you in 7th.
And I am just so... Because I have to say, they were my third army. And I looked at them at first and said, okay, they're big, stupid ogres. They're big, they're dumb, they're fat, they're just goofy. The more I looked at them, the more I read about them. When I finally sat down and read the fluff, I'm like, this is a cool army. It's a neat army. I think, in its initial, we talked about this. The initial form of the ogres was, this ogre book. I mean, a lot of these army books are the third and fourth army book for this army.
Yeah, they've gone through many iterations.
But
yes.
this ogre army, the ogre book is the only ogre book. They're a new army.
Yeah, they were invented for sixth edition.
They were invented for sixth edition, and they're kind of broken. And not broken in a too powerful way. They're kind of broken in a...
Underpowered.
They're underpowered. They were. I think that the creators were so afraid of making them overpowered that they went in the opposite direction and really kind of cut the throats on a lot of these ogres.
Sounds like the difference between 6th edition and 7th edition Dark Elves. Dark Elves were really quite underpowered. I like the army, but they...
No, the High Elves were always pretty good. They always were good. But
High Elves have gone from strength to strength.
And I, like I said, I didn't play 6th edition, but from listening to early episodes of Podhammer and those other shows where they talked about how the new High Elf book or the new Dark Elf book was coming out,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was saying how Dark Elves, I love them, but they're weak. I love them, but they're a joke. They're not tough.
Yep.
The new High Elf book came out and totally turned them around.
The Dark Elf book.
Oh, Dark Elf book. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
What's the difference between the clothing?
Well,
not as much.
We have better troops.
I am super jazzed, though, for the ogres because I think they're going to be a viable team and I'm actually going to get to play an army that I bought.
It's nice to play something and actually have it be competitive for once.
Yeah.
To have a fair chance. Yeah. A genuine fair chance. And I agree with you. I think that...
But if you see the old High Elves book, you'll see that they were pretty tough, but they kind of weren't worth it.
Yes, but no, they were fine. The old Dark Elves book...
The problem with the Dark Elf book is that they're weak, poorly armored, and they actually lacked the strength. They didn't have quite the number of attacks, they didn't have hatred, and they lacked the strength. Well, now they have a little bit of everything.
Yeah, they didn't have... I mean, the Dark Elves were far weaker than the High Elves in those... Both of those... When you stack those two books up against each other, and now the Dark Elves are equal to the High Elves, I think. In fact, and on ranking, I think they... Don't they... On tiered tournament, Dark Elves
are above higher elves. Because it's generally felt that the core rules, the core special rules for the Dark Elves apply more often and have more viable use than the High Elves.
Well, what army are you excited for? We know Harris.
I'm always excited for Chaos Dwarfs, but I don't know which direction they're going, and they're not official, so I can't really use them in tournaments. But for my Dark Elves, I'm excited because I see myself using units that I never used before to good effect. Obviously, my Witch Elves, which I always felt were just too exposed, not powerful enough, and I see them actually having a great place. Poisoned attacks, 3 attacks each, and I'm never going to lose those attacks, even though you're wiping out lots of guys. They're cheap enough where I can build a large block.
And a frenzy.
Well, that's why I'm getting 3 attacks.
Because they have 2 plus the frenzy.
I see the same thing on a lesser extent for my Corsairs, which I think are going to be very useful. My Spearmen are going to be very useful.
Spearmen are going to be awesome.
I'm going to build a Horde Spearmen Dark Elf unit.
I've always liked the Spearmen units for the Dark Elves. I think that they're just, they're pretty, as far as core units go.
For High Elves, I see them as absolutely useful all the time. For Dark Elves, there is a certain lack of synergy because I'm either charging and not getting that extra rank. The first turn of combat in 7th edition is where I use hatred. The second
round,
so
you're either charging and you lose the rank, or
I'm standing still, but I'm not going first.
Right.
Now in 8th edition, I can get best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I can stand still, you charge me, I'm still getting to go first, and I can take advantage of hatred for all of those guys. So
that's nice.
The synergy's there.
Yeah.
So spears. I actually had a question I wanted to ask you in relation to your dwarves, which is your primary army. With the new dwarves in 8th edition, with a better chance of charging, especially when you can use miners and your rangers to get close, do you see yourself using them more often? Do you see yourself using rangers and miners more often?
You know what? I only took miners in 2 games that I've ever played with my dwarves, and I love miners. I think miners, at the very least, are going to become a staple in my dwarf army if I can afford them.
In 8th edition?
In 8th edition.
Okay.
Miners... Rangers, okay, my beef with the Dwarf Rangers is that they were never skirmishers, so it was very difficult to place them and use them. But now if I can place them in a forest and don't have a penalty for movement...
Especially since skirmishers are going to be suffering the same movement and wheeling as regular, so there's no real reason to have it.
I can see myself taking... The problem with Rangers is, okay,
And this, like on my whole thing, my core units, minimum point, a dwarf warrior with no bonuses whatsoever, just, you know, his heavy armor and hand weapon, and I don't even think he comes with a shield. He doesn't.
I don't know.
Hand weapon, heavy armor, that's it, 8 points. That's my cheapest unit, which, you know, you've got, how much, I mean, don't you have like 5 and 6 point units in the Dark Elves?
The only cheap unit I have are the Dark Elf Spearmen. And they're 6 points. Most players will take the shield for 7. I admit that if I'm going the Horde route, I'll probably not even take the shield and go for numbers.
But
otherwise, yeah, I'll take the shield at 7.
You're
going
to have light armor. You had light armor and shield. So you for 7 points, you had the same armor save as my heavy, you know, my 8 point dwarf.
But toughness three.
But you also got that extra rank, and you had hatred, and you had all that other stuff. I think I have always felt that the dwarves are a little expensive considering those limitations. I mean, they still can only march move 6 inches. So if the game is capture table quarters, I actually have to go and charge and hope to break through and keep moving to get that extra movement in.
But your charge range is better now. I don't think we have actually covered that. Charging basically is your basic movement plus 2d6.
Which means your average unit, which moves 4.
Average moves four.
Average moves four, so they can move anywhere from 6 to 16 inches.
So average, but my dwarves, average would be 11. Yeah. While your average is now 10.
Yeah. So I've, you know, before I could only charge 6 inches, which I thought was ridiculous. If you can pursue and flee up to 11.
Yes, but the same argument could be said for my. I mean, we've gone over that last episode.
Right.
The rules aren't going to change, Dave.
Right.
You're dwarves. You know, you have so much. You are suffering an initiative and movement.
Right.
That's what it is. But your charge range, you've got the potential to actually cover more ground.
And I think that's great. I think the fact that now, I mean, before nobody ever feared a charge from my dwarves. Because you just didn't get within 6 inches. You could charge 8 inches, so you knew that you could get close enough and not have, you can get into your charge range and not have to worry, or get close enough that I would move in. I would never get the charge. Now, my charge range is only 1 inch less than your average character.
You've actually got the threat to get stuck in with dwarves before you're ready, and dwarves win protracted combats.
I'm very excited about that. I'm super excited. I like that. That's one of the things, when they explained how the charge moved, yes, it's more random, but once again, there's a lot of randomness and chaos that seems to be happening, and I think that's even a focus. One of the things is, I got that email about the new September, they're putting out the box set.
Oh, yeah.
And that Island of Blood, and if you read what they say, it's like the Warhammer world is full of just chaos and mayhem. I mean, they seem to be going for chaos and mayhem. What does this say here? The Warhammer world. It is a place riven by battle, where mighty armies clash for glory.
Filled with stuff.
Honor or the entertainment of dark gods.
Things happen daily.
Darkened skies, tortured by cataclysmic magics, tear open and rain blood upon ceaseless combatants, and the landscape is racked by the carnage around it. Trees writhe in mutated agony, lashing out with limb and branch, and rivers flow thick with the corpses of the slain. All upon the land are consumed in unending battle.
Not a napkin in sight.
Exactly. An age of war in which victory and defeat hang in the balance. Cast against this macabre tableau, fight mighty armies. I mean, they're really sort of pushing this idea that the chaos that's coming out of the chaos gate is not just warping the people, but literally warping the land. And so there's just more chaotic. So this idea that, well, I don't know if my charge... I used to know I could charge 10 inches. Now I can charge between... You know, my guy can move 6, so he might charge anywhere from 8 to 18. But you know what?
It's a game of chicken.
Well, it's a game of chicken, and it's, once again, the commander. It goes back to, you know, how much faith does that unit have in its commander? He signals the charge, but they're only moving ahead 8. They're not really sure about him. They're moving ahead 18. They're saying, yeah, let's go. You know, sometimes in the heat of battle, cannons are exploding, guns are going off. You don't hear the commands as well.
Yep.
There's this element of chaos runs throughout, which is why I like that Irresistible Force is also works the miscast table. That magic is just fickle. That magic is chaotic. I keep saying I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think my fanboy side is taking over, and I'm looking at just this... The chaos on the battlefield is going to be insane, and there's just going to be so much stuff that is...
So you're saying that the chaos will be unpredictable, and it will...
Chaos will be very chaotic.
That's what it sounds like to me.
And I like chaotic chaos.
So you don't
chaos.
Think there'll be any particular order to this chaos?
I don't like ordered chaos.
No.
No, there should... Yeah, no. No. Nope. I like chaotic chaos.
All right, then.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but that's what I'm talking about, boy.
All right, thanks for tuning in to Don't Know What We're Talking About, Hammer.
It's the put it in the Don't Know What You Said book with the chump, lump, hump, lump, dump.
Do I explain that?
No,
okay.
Because you said you were going to make rap references and you didn't, so I made it for you.
I said a couple of lines from My Humps.
That's right, you did. Oh, but that's not rap. That's.
I'm going to send you a letter from the government. It's going to say that you're a sucker.
Okay.
There's my rap reference.
And as we hit the 18th hour of the show, at some point we're going to need to wrap this up.
Well, let's wrap it up.
I've taken a break.
I've got a couple of quick comments. I have one more question for you as our resident Orc and Goblin player.
Yeah.
That it's likely you're going to continue to take an Orc and a Wyvern, and I see that as a positive thing to do. Do you think that will affect your decision to start taking Trolls as their monstrous infantry? They're getting their stomp attack with your increased range with your Wyvern.
Oh, yeah.
So you think you're going to be taking more Trolls?
Well, because before they had to be within a foot of the general.
Right.
Because otherwise their leadership four, and they're stupid, and they're just going to lose.
Yeah.
They're going to stand around doing nothing. Now, with 18 inches off the Wyvern, I can put him kind of near the middle of the board, and I've got about a 3-foot radius that those guys can go charging through stuff.
Black Orc leader's at a 9, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to pass most of their leadership tests. Okay. What else did I have for you? Yeah, so your demon players out there, can it even afford to take a greater demon if... how did I figure this out? Great Unclean Ones and Keepers of Secrets cannot afford to go level 4 wizard in a 2250 anymore. it's not even an option.
Right.
Other than that, Warriors of Chaos, it's 570 points for a naked Warrior of Chaos Lord on a Chaos Dragon. Not happening.
Probably not. I don't see it. You know what I think is... I'm still wondering where medium cav is going to fit in. The rumor that fast cav, that heavy cav couldn't march move, I liked that rumor because...
I don't see it as addressed.
I don't see it as addressed at all.
No.
But like I said, I mean, you know, I still think that you should still... I mean, I'd like to see... Well, now that silver helms are cheaper...
Yeah.
Than aren't they cheaper than dragon?
By far, they're a lot cheaper.
By far.
So just the cost of points, if you have to do if you have to take 10 of them or something like that, maybe you start seeing medium cav. I only mention medium cav because boar boys are pretty much medium cav.
But they're awfully effective, aren't they?
They've worked for me, but they don't have a really decent armor save.
Oh.
I think.
And with a low initiative, you're right. Even the advantage of speed doesn't pay off for you.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's talk about that another time. Well, in fact, let's jot down for next show. Maybe we'll talk about medium cav. Actually, no. Next show. Next show is going to be the double episode big bonus for us. It's going to be almost 3 weeks because right now it's 19 days until...
I think we're going to be waiting until the next... until 8th edition comes out.
19 days for 8th edition. We're going to place a couple games that weekend. And do a show about our first impressions, not like this, but after actually playing the game.
We promised to have a battle report for you. We simply didn't have time to talk about it this show. Dave and I had, I guess it'll be our last 7th edition.
It's a 7th edition. I don't know how relevant it even is. We might want to do a battle report on one of these games.
True. Well, it was Orcs and Goblins versus Chaos Dwarves, and just to get it out right now in the open, the Chaos Dwarves were soundly defeated. After all my bravado, the Orcs and Goblins swarmed all over me and made short work of the big hats.
I lucked out, though. Chris made a mistake. He put his sneaky gits in a forest, but they're not skirmishers.
You know what? I don't know what I was thinking of. Yeah, I deployed them foolishly. That and
I
misfired with my Earthshaker on turn one, so it dashed out right in the middle of the battlefield. And after that, it was damage control.
My Doom Diver killed his general off of his Lamassu.
That's the danger, but that's how it happened.
Then
after that, my magic phase fizzled.
Well, your other powerful magician plowed forward, chasing my goblins on wolves.
Oh, because I failed to restrain him. I rolled
and
for his leadership.
And he moved forward, and then I charged him with 8 or 9
squig hoppers,
and they pounded the crap out of him. And he was right on the edge of the board, so he ran off. I mean, he lost the combat, and he was 1 inch from the edge of the board when he lost the combat.
It was a good match. It was a really good match, and I really enjoyed it.
It was a great battle. It was fun.
One of those situations where it teeters, and then it starts to crumble and go one way. And
we didn't know, honestly, first two turns, I didn't have a lot of faith in my army to beat you, and I mean, there was a couple of really lucky rolls on my part.
Well, the reason that you frowned on magic paid off for you. I mean, I enjoy magic phase, I enjoy shooting phase, I like those sort of haphazard elements at the very beginning. My whole point was to break his back before he gets into combat with me, since he outnumbers me so greatly, because my primary artillery weapons either misfired and my spellcasters did very little. In fact, one died early on. My level 4 died early.
It was turn
3?
Turn 1, the guy on the chariot was gone.
Turn 2.
Yeah, it was turn 2, that's right. I moved forward, you attacked them, then on my second turn I killed them, and on my third turn I killed your general. And that's the thing.
And that was when it started to turn sour. Now, yeah. I will still say that my Chaos Dwarves are hard as nails.
Well, you admittedly took an unbalanced army. You took an army that was heavy magic, heavy shooting, and didn't have the punch if one of those things were defeated.
It was a conceptual build. I wanted to build the evil variant of the Dwarven Castle, which forces you to come to me.
Yeah. But which again, you had all that points and magic and all that stuff, and once I managed to kill 2 models.
That's it.
That was
unfortunately, they were supposed to be well protected, but it didn't work.
That Doom Diver is that's my favorite thing. I love that Snotling Pump Wagon, but that Doom Diver is just awesome.
Well, they're gonna be worth taking in the 8th edition too.
Sure are.
Well, with Dave, with that, I think we've done a pretty good job covering some of what's coming up for 8th edition. Looking forward to the changes.
Whole day.
We'll be seeing after the 8th edition rulebook, there are going to be some price increases, so pay attention. If you're going to be buying anything, you might want to pick up a Battle for Skull Pass if you're interested in Orcs and Goblins or for Dwarves. That box set is going to be...
$75 still. It's still $75 now.
They're going to discontinue it, so buy it. It's a good deal. If you want either one of those armies, it's worth having. You can't do anything with the 7th edition book.
But you get templates, you get dice, and you get way more than $75 worth of models for either of those armies.
For those who are Chaos Dwarf players, or aspire to be Chaos Dwarf players, might I recommend that this is the greatest single conversion kit for Chaos Dwarfs I can think of, as represented in the GT Indie book. They even mentioned that. So pick that up before it disappears. Some of the price increases for new books, so pick those up before they go. We'll be seeing 8th edition on the 10th, and afterwards I believe the next book to come out will be the Tomb Kings, and hopefully we'll see some interesting changes for them as well.
Possibly. Well, once again, next show's going to be about 3 weeks because we're waiting. It's 19 days till the 8th edition book comes out from the time of this recording. By the time you guys get it, it'll probably be closer to 2 weeks before the book comes out. We're going to have 2 shows. We're going to record 1 show with our thoughts after playing a bunch of games.
Yep.
And then for the newer players, we're going to put out a second episode right away where we are going to just walk through the rules step by step from setup terrain to how to play this. It's going to be long. It's going to be going through. But I think kind of talking through it, you know, how it works will be a nice... Because reading the rule book can get confusing. I mean, anytime you do that, reading the rules and just not actually playing but trying to absorb all those rules can be confusing. Kind of going through it, walking through it, explaining it, I think it'll be a good episode.
Probably be good for us too, as the rules will be relatively new.
And once again, when you teach something, it helps you to learn it more yourself. So.
And once again, we'd like to quickly shout out to our sponsors. Thank you, Unique Gifts and Games. We recommend you check them out. They're in Grays Lake, Illinois. Their website is www.uniqueGG.com, UNIQUEGG.com. Their phone number is 847-548-8270. They're a great place. Pick up your Warhammer there. Pick up your War Machine, your 40K, your board games. And as always, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
Dave, welcome back. Glad to have you back. Looking forward to 8th edition.
Unique Gifts and Games also has a frequent buyer type thing. For every $10 you spend, you get a little mark on the card, and once you get 10 marks, you get a $10 off coupon. So, no, it's a $10 off coupon. So, you wind up, you know, you get a little savings there that they're running. So, yeah, go check them out. We'll put up show notes. We'll put up links to some of the different places we've mentioned, including Unique Gifts and Games. Let's go get something to eat.
I'm starving. All right, friends. Be well. We'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in.